Welcome to the Interracial Drawn Podcast. I'm your host, Leslie Mack, and I'm joined, as always,
by a very white guy.
And you're very white indeed. What's going on, dude?
Not a whole heck of a lot. Happy, I guess, New Year. Is this our first? This is our second podcast?
Second. Who did we have on last week? Why am I blanking right now?
Carl's Jr.
Carl was on last week? No, we had Black Rob on last week.
Oh, Black Rob. Oh, shame on me.
Shout out to you, Black Rob.
Shout out.
Yeah, if this is your first time joining us, thanks for joining us, and I'm glad you found us. If you're looking to continue listening, please go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio, search Interracial John, that's J-A-W-N, or you can go to our website, interracialjohn.com. You can also subscribe to the show on iTunes or Stitcher, which we really appreciate because it helps us out and gets more people looking at us. You can also follow us on Twitter.
Hey, side note, is it because of listeners, but there's an ad in front of us on Stitcher now.
Yeah, I don't know what
that means. When you listen to John, you got to listen to an ad.
That might deter people from listening there, but...
Is that the wrong... I was saying, like, for you and me, like...
Our
Baker's Dozen is now sufficient to...
20, no?
Maybe. Pre-roll an ad on Stitcher.
And you can also follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, and Periscope at Interracial John. That's J-A-W-N. We have a cooking show we do once a month called The Cooking John on Periscope, and that's the first Tuesday of every month. We made chicken with scallops this month, and next month we'll be making pizza chicken, which is really good.
Yeah,
we tested it out this week.
We did a dry run, and I dig it. That was good.
It was pretty tasty.
It really tasted like pizza.
It really did. It's amazing. And we love feedback.
We do.
Our favorite thing. You can leave us feedback in so many ways, from, you know, a little complicated to not at all complicated. You can go to iTunes or Stitcher and leave us a review. You can write it right in there and give us a review. If it's 5 stars, we will read it here on the air. And you get to hear my brother-in-law saying that our amazing 5-star review.
I want to fuck shit up.
And you can also email us. Just go email interracialjohn, again, J-A-W-N, at gmail.com. And if it's not nuts, we'll read that on the air. And you can also, easiest of all, just pick up your phone, dial 657-JOHNERS, that's 657, J-A-W-N-E-R-S, and leave us a voicemail. If it's under 3 minutes, we will, again, play that on the air as well.
Yeah, we should. I think it was like a little bit more successful when we were rolling out beforehand, like, hey, I'm on a recording later today. Let's, you know, someone give us a voicemail. I should do that again.
Okay, do that then.
I failed.
A shout out to Rod and Karen from the Black Guy Who Tips for our general feedback rules. And Karen will be on the show next week. So that's a big...
So exciting.
So exciting. Love when she gets to come on the show. And if you're talking about the show on the Twitters or elsewhere, please use hashtag TheJohn so you can engage with everybody else that's doing it. We had a couple of Twitter notes.
Mm-hmm. Hashtag TheJohn.
Uh-huh. Hashtag TheJohn. This was from Ben Von Nulrich. He says, Interracial John, I'm meaning to get you feedback. I love your podcast so much.
Thank you, Ben.
I'm now catching up on your past episodes. Keep it up. Thanks, Ben.
Thanks, Ben.
And we also have a Lauren in Pittsburgh at QED77. She says, just listen to at Interracial John. I think most white people have schism they aren't aware of. I'll tell a story. You can go to her her timeline to hear the rest of that. And we have a very nice email I think we're going to have to get into. So let's get this out here. And this is from Hiroja Sheeb, who is a host of Musings of a Sheeb.
The Dogecoin podcast.
The Dogecoin podcast, exactly. A longtime listener of the show, one of the original genres.
What,
sure.
What were we just watching?
Dope.
Hey, very white guy watched Dope, and they had Bitcoin was a
later.
It was like a central kind of like plot point.
Mm-hmm. So Hiroja says to Leslie and Drew, you asked for some feedback. Here you go.
Oh, thank you.
I've been enjoying the last few very much, covering a wide range of topics that not everyone is doing and dishing out very unique outlook on everything. My fave segment so far is This Week in Apologies. I have personally been taking notes should I ever fuck up how to properly give an apology, but it has me personally reflect on my life to see if I've ever really been properly apologized to. It's been in the iffy realm, if you must know.
Interesting.
So on to the heart of the email. Maybe because I'm coming from the mindset of the decentralized movement, or the fact that I'm part of a little niche of the millennial generation called Catalano. Me too.
Okay.
I do not understand why any movement, political, economic, whatever, needs a singular or a few people to lead. It seems within the last few months there has been an increase of articles pushing, criticizing, or just plain misrepresenting the Black Lives Matter movement, asking why there is not a leader slash leadership, or worse, that's the reason it's not effective at all, which is bullshit. Black Lives Matter needs leaders, ? I know a lot of the criticism towards Black Lives Matter is generational as well as just plain hate, but could it be that the children and the grandchildren of the worst generation to hit America, the baby boomers, whom are running and support this movement, may have learned a few lessons from history? I do not know. Maybe the Black Lives Matter are taking just a mere glance at past successful and unsuccessful political movements, took some notes, threw up a simple Excel sheet making out a pros and cons list, done a few pivot tables, and then applied that simple analysis to the movement equals no leaders and Twitter. All joking aside, I know you've addressed this in previous episodes, but since it's a new year and also a political year, maybe you're willing to talk about this again. Expound on it further. Will this continue? How will the new year political year is going to shape up and batter the movement? Thanks, Hiroja.
Interesting. So there's a couple parts. I guess there's one part where she's inquiring. I don't know if she's asking of us, but inquiring as to the genesis of the current leader, full but horizontally leaderless movement, right? Not the top-down hierarchy.
Yeah.
And whether that was, you know, deliberate and consultative and based on prior experience, so forth and so on. I'd be willing to say yes, definitely, that it wasn't accidental, that it was deliberate on many different people's parts. Whether, like, there's a group of people that sat down and said, let's do this. Like, I don't think that happened, but, you know, I have no clue. In terms of, like, I think the other part of the question was, do we think that it's going to continue that way? And I'll let you just expound on that. I think absolutely. I think it needs to, but...
Yeah, I think there's two things that are very unique about the movement itself. One is that it's very intersectional, which leads itself to being leaderful, not leaderless, as folks like to pigeonhole it, which means that people that are at intersections are the leaders of the movement. And being an inclusive movement means that you need to be able to listen to the thoughts and input of many different people from all different kinds of perspectives. And so that lends itself to everybody leading together. The other thing that I would mention is that one of the hallmarks of this movement is that it's an internal one, meaning that if there's something that you can do, you're encouraged to just fucking do it. And so that also leads itself to everybody leading, because we're all kind of looking at the skills we have to bring to the table and what we're able to do, and then employing those to further the cause of Black liberation. So I don't think it's going to stop. I think this year is going to be really interesting. I'm not going to make like any prognostications, but I think it's been interesting. I think this last year was a lot of lessons learned. I think a lot of people at the end of the year spent time like I did, just kind of regrouping themselves and recentering things. And I think you're going to see some like really badass, super nuanced and very focused campaigns come out from many, many people that you probably are aware of through protest actions last year. So I think it's going to look different in that it's going to be some new tactics. It's going to be some different approaches to things. I know that there's an amazing policy team of organizers from all over the country that have been meeting, you know, a lot in the last year, just people that you probably wouldn't even think would be in the same room together, that you'd be surprised to know that are in communication with each other, because you might think that they don't like each other or they don't have the same ideology. But this idea of what policies we can come to the table with is very strong. And I think you're going to see some really amazing work come from those efforts.
Yeah, I would add maybe just two comments that I think the Oprah, like, where are the leaders sort of narrative and statements and whatnot, I don't think I hear that nearly as much. That seems to be, you know, quelled to some degree. I don't know if that's just they've given up on that or that's...
Well, I think that they've decided to anoint leaders. So to them, well, that's enough.
That was my second part, was that, you know, A, you don't hear that as much. And perhaps, as you've hypothesized, that there are, you know, some individuals that get more shine than others, you know, for a variety of reasons.
Which happens
and all the time.
It's not abnormal.
Human dynamic. It's a group dynamic. I'm not complaining about it. And I'm not sitting here trying to throw salt on anybody. You know, everyone does work, and there are plenty of people that do more work that don't get shine and so forth.
And it's nothing new. I mean,
yeah, it's no big deal.
Do most people know who Diane Nash is? No, they don't. Like,
right.
It's not anything that's not happened in previous movements, and it is what it is. I think that Yeah, so I'll just say that.
Well, like I said, I think that I don't hear that refrain nearly as much, and I do think that that horizontal nature of, I guess, the current iteration, I think it's one of its greatest strengths. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's bound to go anywhere. And when you start seeing, like for me, this is the second year we've seen now post Mike Brown certain things, like it's going to be our second MLK, Reclaim MLK right. weekend, see what's going to happen there. It's going to be our second, Black Friday and Blackout for Christmas, and some of the actions, like what they did at Mall of America, you could see it was almost like the thing that they did was the brand itself.
Yeah.
And it didn't require the two or three people that were the first ones to think of it and do it. It's like it can live on without, do you know what I'm saying? Like it's almost like an action at Mall of America surrounding Black Friday and Christmas. Like I'd be goddamn if that doesn't go on forever.
Yeah.
Like literally, I mean, I'd be surprised. why would it happen next year? Why would it stop?
Yeah.
Why would it stop?
It's interesting. Well, it's funny you mentioned Reclaim MLK. I'll just talk a little bit about that. Is that that's definitely happening again, Reclaim MLK 2016. And website launch, people can go to reclaimmlk.com to take a look at it. And as you said, it has evolved. If those who don't know, last year we spent time during Reclaim MLK doing exactly what the word says, which is kind of looking at this idea and the tools that Martin Luther King Jr. used, nonviolent civil disobedience and direct action, and the fact that he was part of a larger movement than that, and kind of sweeping away this kind of whitewash, softened, sanitized commercial use of his legacy and what we should be doing to honor him, and really moving away from this idea of what a day of service means and what service would look like for MLK, because it wouldn't look like, you know, cleaning a classroom or painting a school or sweeping up a park.
Well,
it would look like actually something.
Even where we lived in Philadelphia, like I knew plenty of people like, oh, what are you doing? Like our whole company is MLK Day. Mm-hmm. They've got buses and we're going to go to work, but we're not working. We're supposed to go in jeans and the buses are going to take us to, you know, this school and that, and we're going to paint and do this and that.
Well,
it was never fucking Camden. It was never the fucking like, you know, I don't know what schools they were going to.
I mean, they were going to plenty of different schools. Little history on that is that Philadelphia actually started the National Day of Service. That's where
it's huge.
Its genesis was. So it's obviously very ensconced there. But there's an entire like apparatus that does that, nothing but that, all year round, plan for this day of action. And it's such a waste of resources when we really need to be doing lots of different things. So anyway, so that was last year. So this year, you know, as Drew mentioned, there's an evolving. And so a bunch of organizers, myself included, we've been meeting for about 6 weeks now, once a week, to kind of discuss what it's going to look like this year. And so, again, you can go to reclaimmlk.com to look at more information on this. But what we're doing is two different sets of actions. You're going to see information about in the next couple of days, and they're going to be executed on Saturday and on Monday. So on Saturday, we're going to be focusing on divesting, which is to defund racist systems. And I'm going to read directly from the website here, and again, reclaimmlk.com. Divest from racist systems and invest in black communities. Simply put, we want the things that have been proven to hurt our families and our communities to lose support, resources, and money. And at the same time, we want to see a serious investment in solutions that actually help our communities thrive and flourish. Simply put, let's end the cash cow for jails that cage us, police that kill us, and the weapons that empower them, and more resources for education, health, and strong communities. So on Saturday, we're going to see actions that will draw attention to those institutions and systems that have failed and continue to hurt black people. And so that's Divest Saturday. And then on Invest Monday, which is actual MLK Day, we're going to shine a light on the resilience and strategic ways we can build our community, protect one another, and inspire our people. So that's exactly kind of in the same spirit of what you were talking about, which is an evolution of ideas that we saw last year and taking them to a different level for this year. So I'm excited, not just for Reclaim MLK, but just for what the year brings. And I'm coming out of my sabbatical this weekend. So, and I know you're already mad. I already have a 2-week trip on the calendar already. You're like,
yeah, that's another gripe. It's another complaint. Another day.
Another day. We'll talk
about
that.
Yeah.
Good point. I'm not a player. I just tweet a lot.
That always cracks me up. So I haven't talked about that Twitter game in a while, but so I saw in someone And her website's White Privilege Doc, and she's a professor at a school in Pennsylvania, maybe University of Pennsylvania. And she had a dissertation on privilege and trying to like get people to understand it and figure it out and whatnot. And I'm not going to disrespect her, but it's, you know, obviously it's a dissertation, so it was like deliberately intellectual.
Right.
But it's like long. It's like
you read the whole thing.
I went through the abstract and kind of went through like some of the bullet points to see what she was doing. And I read maybe a few pages, and she like right away was like, I can't believe it. You read part of it? No one's read that. Like. I made that to...
Oh, wait, the girl herself?
Yeah, because
I
follow her on Twitter. She's someone I'm connected with on Twitter.
Oh, okay.
So I'm reading, you know, parts of her
Twitter game.
Twitter game, her dissertation. And in it, she had referenced a... maybe not a social experiment, but referenced something that had said, name a nationally known white person that you would identify as racist.
Right.
And then name a nationally known white person you would identify as anti-racist.
Okay.
Is that coming from me?
No, it's me. I'm going into Skype. It's fine. Okay. You don't have to stop.
Sorry. So I tweeted both. Said, name a nationally known racist. Name a nationally known person you identify as anti-racist. And I got a bunch of dead people, which doesn't really count anymore. But like, so now I'm saying alive. And everybody had racists. Tons and tons of racists.
Sure.
And again, the purpose of the experiment, a lot harder to come up with a white anti-racist individual. And then we had a further discussion about what is being white and racist, and then the whole like a lot of us ain't shit kind of thing,
right?
So it was kind of interesting, but Trump, without a doubt, everyone said that on the one side. I thought of note of interesting, Hillary was nominated on both racist and not racist,
right?
I thought that was interesting.
That makes sense. Somebody put her as a national anti-racist, and I literally just quote tweeted hashtag nope.
So I kept retweeting shit, but whoever retweeted her as anti-racist, I was like, I can't. Same with Bill Clinton.
I was like, bullshit.
I was like, Bill Clinton. Yeah. I don't know. And the argument with Bill Clinton was a little bit more.
Nuance?
A little bit nuanced. Mm. But I was like, his policies, like, and he's like, well, he made the decisions based on the information at the time. I was like, I don't know. The outcome was still really horrible, like worse, for black people than a lot of presidents since like Reagan kind of.
You don't get to play, what, he didn't know that only black people are going to get locked up? Fuck you.
I don't know.
Nah.
I don't know. Well, that whole bit was entertaining. And while that was going on, I kept seeing a bunch of people retweeting something. I was like, what the fuck is this? Like, who's retweeting this? Like, what is this? And it was one of my like auto like bloop, like, shout out, thanks for following. And it was LeBron James. So shout out LeBron James.
It's not the real LeBron James.
No, it's a parody account.
A LeBron James parody account.
Yeah, but with like half a million followers, like, like a bunch.
What's he following you for? I don't know. She, because it could be a she.
Well, and here's the thing. I feel like I feel like I remember this before.
Mm-hmm. That they followed you before?
Yeah, and if you were like trying to get like...
One follower.
No, like just like if like your game was trying to gain followers,
right.
I could see unfollowing me and then following me again later to just to get that auto. Like if you
because a bunch of people now retweeting it.
I'm not retweeting it, but like if you knew the algorithm and like I'm not gonna like all right, I'll say it. It's not like a fucking Coke secret. It's like once somebody follows me that has over X number of followers but doesn't have a ratio that's 1-to-1, right? Because like if it's one
right.
to like 1-to-1's like all the like follow
like
back
fake,
train,
yeah, it's like
yeah.
Fake
I don't want to shout those folks out. So if you got over 5,000 followers and you're not a 1-to-1 ratio, you get a shout out.
Yeah, but last week All Lives Matter followed.
I know that was really weird. People were like, I don't know about this very white guy. It's like it's someone said I should put in a keyword like suppression filter.
Yeah,
like,
you should. I don't know if that works on those things.
Doesn't work that way.
Well, we have a great show for everyone. We have a guest this week.
Yay.
Someone who's been on the show before and we totally just love, which is Chris Fett from Movie Trailer Reviews and Insanity Check. So let's grab him and we'll get into it.
And hey, you know what? Before we get in, no one tweeted the John where that soundbite was from.
Oh, nobody knows where that soundbite
was from. Wagwan London Town. Who was unexpected?
Was it a T-shirt? Was it a T-shirt?
It was a T-shirt.
No one's gonna tweet us where that's from. Come on.
Wagwan London Town. Who wants some expecting?
Who wants some expecting?
That's right. So hashtag the John, tag us at Interracial John, and let us know.
It's not
what
that,
that's
obscure.
From.
Is it that obscure?
We can narrow it down a little, but it is from a television show.
All right, television.
Fair enough. So it's from a TV show. And play it one more time for folks.
Wagwan London Town. Who wants some expecting?
Wagwan London Town.
Who wants some expecting? All right, let's grab Chris.
Snap.
All right. And we are now joined by Chris Fett. What's going on, Chris? So good to have you on the show again.
Welcome.
Thank you guys for having me back.
Yes. For those who are unaware, Chris is host of the Insanity Check podcast as well as Comic Book Review Club or Comic Book Book Club. Did I get that right?
Yes.
Yes. Hell No Cupid, TV, movie reviews, and more. And he's also newly committed activist for combating white genocide, just so everyone knows.
Oh, man, I almost forgot about it. You know, I'm really sad that nobody on the campaign trail has run a white genocide.
Not a one. It's shocking, really.
We got to get you, like, some sort of, like, a cape or something, dude. Like, I don't know what it would be, but, like a
genocide cape.
Yeah, something, dude.
I'm going to go to a Trump rally. I'm going to go to a Trump rally and ask about white genocide.
So there's a couple of Twitterers I follow that crack me up with the white genocide folks. Like, they do the reverse trolling thing. And this one dude calls it the honky cost. And he just fucking, every time he's fucking with these dudes, he's like, hashtag the honky cost. It's real. Honky cost 2015. Oh, it just kills me, the two of them. Just laughing all the damn time.
Well, awesome. Well, and Chris runs the entire Movie Trailer Reviews Network, which is a whole host of shows. So talk to the folks a little bit about what's been going on with the network. What are you guys working on right now? What's going on?
Oh, man, it's been, I took a break at the end of last year just because I got overwhelmed. But we are back this year. Hopefully, I'm hoping to get more people, not myself. So I got another person I just talked to today about maybe joining our network and doing a show. I have Shannon and the Doctor are doing Supergirl reviews for us. And that's my first show where it doesn't involve me at all.
Cool.
All I do is edit the show and put it up. They review the show, which I love the show. I just couldn't add another show. I couldn't keep up with another show.
I mean, you guys are doing so much. And plus, I know Legends of Tomorrow is going to be on, like, during the same time as the other stuff.
Yeah.
How are you guys even going to do that?
We don't know.
Okay, just making sure. Like,
I haven't even done my Arrow midseason review yet. I'm just going to write that when I write the show comes back. It is so much. So I don't know how we're going to do Legends of Tomorrow. I know tomorrow we have an interview with Deepam and our connection interview with the writer from Transformers More Than Meets the Eye,
ooh,
John Roberts.
Nice.
So that'll be really cool. That's a really good, fun book to read. So we have that coming in. I know we're all coordinating going to San Diego Comic-Con this year. I know Gas Pod is going. Three Black Geeks is going this time. So we're all going there again. So this will be my third San Diego Comic-Con. Which seems like a lot, considering I'm now the veteran.
Yeah,
the
you're
group
the vet.
Going to
yeah.
San Diego, so in the San Diego Comic Con, so I'm coordinating that. So yeah, it's gonna be fun. I'm trying to get all our stuff together for hopefully we'll be doing another Awesome Con panel again this year,
which people were like raving about. It was so cool.
Yeah, it was really fun. So,
do they let you guys live stream those ever, or is it up to the host?
Technically, so the way they do these conventions, they usually discourage live streaming because, again, if you can live stream your panel, why would anybody show up and pay that price to go to the panel?
Right.
But what we normally do, because I now have one.
Sorry, that was me.
It's true.
I was setting stuff up, and it's the autoplay ads, dude.
Stupid ads.
What I now do is I have a camcorder, so now I've been actually trying to record them. So I think the last Awesome Con panel, Quita and Sterling recorded the panel on the phone, and they did it, and they pulled it down off a Periscope. When we did our DC Podfest panel, though, I actually had my camcorder recording, so we got most of the panel.
Nice.
So hopefully we'll do it again this time if we do a panel again. So yeah, we're getting pretty good at this. We're becoming, you know, myself and Phenom, we've become pretty good at handling this whole thing. So
well,
we're
I know,
getting along.
Like, you guys don't latch onto the whole like blurred, you know, title or whatever. But I will say I find you guys to kind of be the experts in this particular area of blurredness in podcasting and panels and those sorts of things. Did you ever, like, even let's say 4 years ago, think that this level of this wealth of content would be coming out in so many different formats in this arena of superheroes and comic books and all of this stuff? I mean, it seems like it's just been an exponential amount of growth.
I mean, there was always hope. Like, there was always hope we would get there, but not to the level we got. Like, to me, like, seeing The Force Awakens, and I know there's all these people that have these think pieces about characters and whatnot, blah, blah, blah. Listen, all I know is I went to go see The Force Awakens, and there were little black kids, little Asian kids, little Latino kids that could go to see the movie for the first time. And to them, the diversity of The Force Awakens will never be – it's not shocking to them because it's like oh, yeah, Star Wars always had black characters. Star Wars always had, you know, diverse characters in it. It's like, you know, kids that were born in the Obama era, was gonna always, you tell them, hey, yeah, you know, we used to have white presidents. Like, the fuck you mean?
What do you mean? Right.
Like, wouldn't that be a nice, that'd be great. Like, you have to, like, remember when there was a white president?
Right.
Well, so, I mean, there's lots of kids. It's 8 years. It's a long time in your psyche.
Yeah, true.
You know, to not think of that.
So, like, I think sometimes, this is why when I always argue people about that diversity, we're not getting enough. I'm like, I don't think you guys know what it was like growing up as a black, you know, or a non-white nerd growing up. Mm. Like, you just, you know, you dealt with it.
Right.
You know, there was no black Spider-Man. So you were just like, ah, fuck, it doesn't matter. You know, you just, it was okay. Now you get that stuff and it's like, oh, wow, you know what? And it's not token.
Yeah,
you know, they're actually good characters.
Yeah,
we were talking about Black Panther and just how, like, not.
Well,
as
let's
a,
not start. Let's wait to get to that. We'll talk about that.
Okay.
In one second. We'll get to it. Which is obviously huge news. But I will say you're totally right about that whole idea of, you know, representation, not in a token way, but in a real tangible way of what, you know, I think comic books and superheroes represent in our pop culture, in our culture and society, which is this idea of the, you know, the impossible being possible, and being excluded from that as people of color is just like, fuck, it's disheartening. And to see that shift has been amazing to watch. And so, of course, we'll transition now to the biggest, probably black comic book movie news of the, like, century. It's been teased and misreported and falsely reported, but finally we got the actual word from Marvel that yes, Ryan Coogler, the God, is going to be directing Black Panther. Just your immediate thoughts when it happened, and what was your, I mean, did you expect it, or were you still kind of like, I don't know?
Well, no, I expected, like, there's a short list that I had of directors. So when Ava turned it down, it was Ryan Coogler, and then I can't remember the guy who did the movie Dope. And I believe those were the three names.
Oh, like, Fukuhama, right? Is that his name or something like that?
Something like that. Mm-hmm. I can't remember what it is. I'm just, forgive me for that. I'm terrible with names anyway. But
Famuyiwa is his name. Rick.
Yeah.
Famuyiwa.
So there was, like, I want to say early 2015. There was those three, and then I think F. Gary Gray's name was also in the running. But I think that happened, like, after Straight Outta Compton came. I don't even think it was a real offer.
Right.
So those were the three names, and I was really excited about all three of those names because, like, they're, to us, they're bigger names now because we know them. But it would be a really, it's not the typical name. Like, when people talk about Black Panther and directors, everybody's like, well, get Spike Lee or get Antoine Fuqua, and I was like, please don't. Like, I don't like Spike Lee, but, like, even with Antoine Fuqua, I like his movies, but compare Southpaw to Creed.
There's no comparison at all.
Like,
you don't want to make that comparison.
Nobody
does. He doesn't want to make that comparison.
And it's not, it's not that I don't like his movies. I do, like, you know, I'm an Olympus Has Fallen stan, you
sure.
know, I like.
I love Training you know, Day, like everybody. Day. Yeah, like, of course, they're great movies.
Right. But
this is a whole other thing, though.
Right. But there's I wanted somebody who I think really gets a better understanding and a more nuanced approach to blackness.
Because
I feel like a lot of some of these older directors, they're kind of heavy handed and they kind of go with this, like, almost stereotypical, you know, you're not going to touch on. You might get if you get a black woman in the movie, it's going to be a little, you know, a little misogynistic. That's why when F. Gary Gray's name came up after Straight Outta Compton, I was like, no, I like him as a director. No, let him go and do the Fast and Furious series.
Right.
I don't want him doing Black Panther. That's why I really wanted Ava to do it. I was like, oh, that would have been great. Get a black woman to do it. Then I don't want to worry about whether
all that
black
other,
woman.
Yeah.
Right. So, and when I saw Creed, and, you know, I know he did Fruitvale Station, I was like, oh, no, this is another really great director who doesn't get the shine that he needs. You know, we'll probably end up talking about this, but he's going to get screwed during award season again.
Of course. No doubt.
You know?
Just like he was with Fruitvale Station, quite frankly. I, I'll just say this. Like, I literally started Ferguson Response because of that movie. We saw that movie and it changed
your life.
The entire trajectory of my actual life, literally. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I have a like big soft spot for Ryan and for that movie in particular, and to see it not get the accolades it should have because of the subject matter, because that's really the only reason. I mean, the writing was excellent. The cinematography was ridiculous. Everything about it was top notch. So
people were like, oh, well, you know, it got a release too early in the year, so it couldn't stop. Like, it annoys me when people say that crap, because it's like, when it's other movies, like, you know, that it's not going to stop The Revenant.
Sure ain't.
Nah. They didn't when Fruitvale came out, we had to kind of, I'm going to say, struggle to find a theater, but it wasn't at every theater. It wasn't even at a lot of theaters.
Here you go. We did a review for it. Here's the, I went down on the review, and here's the thing that people are going to be like, how are you talking about this movie? I never saw it. Kind of refused to. Because I know what the subject matter is, and I knew it was going to be good. I saw the trails and was like, no. I'm sorry. I can't watch that movie. I knew it was going to be. And then when people came out, I was like, oh, my goodness, it's so good. I was like, oh, yeah, I know it's good. But I'm not going to. I can't watch it.
No, I mean, it gutted me.
Yeah.
Gutted me.
And the cinema tag, editing, whatever Ryan did. But he took like actual footage and some stuff that they filmed and interspliced it at parts in the end. It was raw.
That's the thing that's going to that really excites me about the Black Panther movie. Mm-hmm. He's been doing – I don't know who the cinematographer he got for – Fruitvale Station was,
but Creed?
I know the one he got for Creed was really good. It was a woman, and she was really good. And
those
so I'm really
fight
excited
scenes,
to
it
see.
Looked like ballet, like straight up. It was just visually, it was so dynamic. And a lot of times in fight movies, like, it can be flat. Like, it's cool and all, but depending on the perspective they choose, it cannot feel like you're in it.
Yeah.
And this was not like that at all.
Well, it was the most entertaining of a movie where the MacGuffin was so, like, you just knew exactly what was going to happen. There was zero surprises.
Right.
None.
Right.
Like, I'm not saying I could have wrote it, but it was like, I know it precisely what's going to happen from start to finish. And still loved it. Still loved every minute of it.
Yeah. And I think, like I said, it's been fun watching the evolution of some of these movies and how they go.
The thing that excites me, he's 20 fucking nine. Let's just give up. Just that alone, I think,
for
is
the, for
huge for this young Black director who has gotten this far literally on his talent. There's nothing else that has come into play. It's not some sort of like fluke. It's just he's that goddamn talented. I have a quick clip of him actually talking about getting the job. I think I have it anyways. Come on. Of course.
When we go to the store, I find
the bane of a pot.
Oh my gosh.
Damn it
won't let me pause it either.
Yeah, have you guys noticed? I don't know if you seen it at all. I'm almost like I have to at some point cut the umbilical cord. Like, they're just driving me fucking nuts. But they're
here. He is. Here he is. Hold on. What are you saying, Drew?
The CNN pre-roll ads. So the CNN. Thing. That, no. Here's the thing. The newest thing now. The pause button on the ad is like they minimize the bar, and like I swear to God, it's like a 1 pixel by 1 pixel spot to fucking get the fucking thing to expand back up. Yeah. I was just like, fuck, I want to pause this fucking thing. I want to fucking pause it. What the fuck? I want to pause it.
Yeah. Oh, CNN is like, I try to avoid them now because
me too.
They made their site almost
it's unbelievable.
It's fucking terrible.
For real, it's the articles on the front page make you believe it's going to be an article. They don't tell you there's an ad, and like it's kind of clickbaity. And then you get there, and the article that they give you is like a shitty abstract of the video that's embedded. You're like, are you kidding me? God damn it. They're just horrible.
All right, here's Ryan.
It's a Black Panther, that idea of kind of coming in from a very personal, quite intimate angle.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. That's definitely the plan.
Amazing news, by the way. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you, bro.
You must be pretty excited about getting your teeth into the Marvel Universe, because they can't seem to put a foot wrong at the moment.
Yeah, I'm excited, man. I grew up very into pop culture, man. Very into comic books, so it's something that is just as personal to me as the last couple of films I was able to make. So, you know, I feel really fortunate to be able to work on something that I'm this passionate about again.
So when does it get started?
Soon, right now.
Yeah. Straight after this interview.
Yeah, and I'm working right now while I'm talking to you.
So, I mean, that just gets me super excited. Like, he sees it as a personal story that he wants to tell, and I'm very excited about it. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, I think this is one of the films that, like, years ago, I can't remember when, but it was 5 years, somebody else that came out, and they were like, why are you guys doing a Black Panther movie? Because this is a movie that had been in development for years. And I want to say, was it John Ridley or somebody else? John Singleton, I think, had at one point been involved in a project with it. It's like back in like maybe like 2008. And so they've been talking about it, and people were wondering, when are we going to do a Black Panther movie? And then somebody, it might not have been Feige, I think it was somebody else, said something about how, well, you know, it's really difficult to do, you know, Black Panther in you know, Wakanda, stuff like that. And people just went like, oh, I can't believe if you can do Asgard, how can you not do Wakanda? Like,
right.
I was like, hey, guys, I think you don't understand. Like, it is difficult. This is a very delicate movie, because even when you look at the, like, they've had black writers for some Black Panther series before, and some of them have, they've had black men writing them. There's two, I think, Hudlin and Christopher Priest, and you read those series, and like, some of them kind of just, they missed a mark, or they're a little, you know, they're a little too stereotypical, and there's issues with them. So, you know, when you have, you know, a character where the whole premise is it's an African nation that is still, you know, holding on to their tribal roots. They're basically untouched by the West, but they're also the most civilized, they're the most advanced civilization on Earth.
Right. That's a lot.
I don't know what that looks like.
No.
You know, like, people are like, oh, well, no, it's simple. I'm like, no, it's not, because you'll have people in loincloths who also fire, you know, laser weapons.
Right.
I think that's dope, but you gotta accept the fact that, how do you do that on film and not make it look like the racist episode of Star Trek?
Right.
You know, The Next Generation. That, you know, it's more difficult than I think people realize. And, you know, I just finished reading a comic book series now that has Black Panther at the center of it. And I've been watching what Marvel has been doing with the character in the comics, and it's, and in reading what they're saying about doing it now and who the directors they've been going after to get. Like, you don't go after Ava DuVernay. You don't go after Ryan Coogler for this, to direct this movie. You don't get Ta-Nehisi to fucking, you know, write the series coming, I think, in April.
Right.
You know, you don't get that kind of stuff and then completely shit on the character you put in live action. So I'm very excited to see what they do with it, him having this important role. I mean, it drops Black History Month in 2018.
Yeah.
You know, that's going to – I can't wait. That's going to be one of the – it's going to probably be one of their biggest non-Avenger movies that they've ever done.
Because yeah, it's gonna crush. Sure. It's going to be insane. And I think it's interesting, you know, I think there's a meme that's been going around just saying that, like, oh, you know, we've been told that minorities and women can't open a movie, and then Star Wars happened. It's like, you know, I feel like Black Panther is going to be kind of the next level of that. And I think, I mean, obviously we're all excited to see Chadwick play the character. He's going to be in Civil Wars, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So we get a little taste, and I think that's going to be awesome to get people excited and seeing the character interact with people that, with characters that folks are already aware of and already have, you know, some allegiance to. And I think it's a great way to get people hyped up for the movie. So I'm excited. Oh, it's going to be awesome.
I think it just, it, you know, sort of reaffirms what we talked about on our show last week, Tanya Pinkins walking off of Broadway.
Right.
Because the, you know, black perspective in her mind and in her, you know, opinion, and quite rightly, wasn't being, you know, even in the telling of this story, it was being centered on whiteness in some way through a white gaze or white lens,
right,
the Lucy card. And I think when you look at what they're doing with Black Panther, I think what Chris was saying, you and I talked about this the other day, not on the podcast, like, it's clear they're not going to, you know, they were going to do it right. They, you know, did all these things right. It'd be stupid to then fuck it up at the end by not hiring somebody like Ryan. You know what I'm saying?
And I also just think that, like, good, bad, or indifferent, you know, when we see what's happened the last couple of years with the movement for Black Lives and all of the voices that we are now, through technology, through different mediums, through lots of different arenas, able to see and hear from, it's clear that, you know, black folks, we have an important voice, important story to tell. And it's become something that sells, and it's just a fact. So it, of course, makes sense that these movies would take take heed, and these studios would make sure that they're, you know, cashing in like everybody else's.
You'd be surprised. I mean, that's the thing that makes me so mad. It's like, you would think that, but it's like, as much as people get on like comic movies and like even sci-fi for not, you know, stepping up, like, they seem to be the only ones. Everybody else kind of just like, oh, you know what? We're going to do another movie in Egypt, but yeah, we're not going to have any black people in it.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I think they have a level of autonomy that most people don't. And they are able to employ that because they have so many money-making revenue streams.
We're seeing some black people in some things. Every other futuristic, like whether it's dystopia, utopia, if it's in the future and it's sci-fi, it's whiter than present day.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it never gets gets blacker. Like, the actual trend that's happening worldwide is never realized in the future.
It's like, oh, what happened to us? I just always think it's funny because in real life right now, our country and the world is browning. In this imagined future, people of color. It's pretty
few. It's sprinkling.
Yeah. Well, you know what I do when it comes to things like that? I just assume that all the black people got together and we just got off our...
We're like, deuced.
Yeah, that's what that's... It's sad you gotta do that because it just doesn't make any sense.
No.
And it's weird, like, I'm also really excited for, like, you know, I keep talking about Marvel, but hey, DC's doing, like, when you look at what DC's trying to do with their movies, I'm really hoping they pull it off because they've gotten some really diverse things too. I mean, Suicide Squad is a supremely diverse movie.
Very.
They have an Asian director for Aquaman. They're embracing Jason Momoa's heritage, Hawaiian heritage, for Aquaman. And, you know, Aquaman's not going to be some blonde white guy anymore.
Dude, he's
going
to be
you know, a very, very brown, you know, Pacific Islander.
Right.
You know, with all his tattoos and everything that means something. It's like, hey, you know what? I appreciate that at least these companies, when it comes to these movies, have realized that it's not just white people that watch movies or white people who buy these comic books. So
absolutely, and for my money, the blackest show on television is The Flash. So
yeah,
you know, DC's definitely throwing in
Definitely want to not spend the whole time talking about comic books because I do like comic books, but. I think the greatest thing to happen to comic books is that one that you got into from Chris's show that I read one on.
Oh, Saga?
But on the iPad,
it's
yo.
So good.
The images and shit and the graphics on the iPad are dope, dude.
You look at it like, what is that? I'm like, it's fucking Saga, dude, and it's awesome.
And it's got like little animations and shit, dude.
It's so good.
It's kick-ass.
Mm. Saga's amazing. Mm-hmm.
But on the iPad, I don't know if I would enjoy it as much.
Because you don't have like you never had comic books or anything.
I had comic books, but not quite. You know, I wasn't like a comic book person.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, let's get into it, Drew.
Okay. Wait. We got to do the news. What's that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The news is coming on. The news is coming on.
Well, I figured we start with the State of the Union, which was last night, and President Obama gave his final address to Congress and to the nation about the state of the country. What were your quick thoughts on that, Chris? Did you like it? Did you like what he had to say? What were your thoughts?
Oh, I didn't even watch it.
Mm.
one, I was too busy watching. I had a screener that night the Benghazi porn that Michael Bay is doing.
Oh, Lord. Is that the one with John Krasinski or whatever?
Yeah, he's actually not bad in the movie, but still, like you said, it's nothing but.
Why does that need to be made into a movie? I understand
like
three people
Michael
died.
Bay,
I'm sorry.
Michael Bay reminds me of like that white dude that just he's like, oh, you know, they always have the movie where there's like the rich son of the like tycoon who is
let's go shoot some trap.
Who's frivolous and just like gets to do whatever whim comes into his head. That's like Michael Bay's approach to movie making. I feel like he wakes up one day and is like, oh, I'm kind of interested in this. I'm gonna make a movie about it. Like there's no rhyme or reason to anything he does.
Listen, I can do this now because technically I'm not giving a review, but there's good acting in it, but it really is just to make the is there to make any person who is there to make any person who was mad at
Hillary
President Obama or Hillary feel better that's all it is.
Mm. Of course.
Is it going to make people that hate Hillary hate her more?
Yeah, because that's all it is. It's just steps to make everybody but the operators look incompetent.
Look incompetent, of course.
That is everything about it. And I'm just like, okay. Mm. But so anyway, back to the State of the Union. So I didn't watch it. Other reason why I didn't watch it is at this point, I mean, the State of the Unions are just what they are. I mean, it's never going to be – it's just there for people to, like, you know, either you're going to be happy with it or you're not going to be happy with it or whatever. And so to me, at this point, they're just kind of pointless to me.
Hmm. I hear
you. I just don't bother watching them.
Yeah.
And that goes for most political speeches at this point. Right. I mean, they're just like, you know, they serve a purpose. And they're just not for me.
You know, but what pisses me off is one of those purposes is the GOP is to have like this like frowning, like I'm not going to stand up and clap
The part that I find interesting is the spectacle of it. I find it interesting because it's one of the few kind of like almost, you know, equivalency of like royal like coronation type things that we have in the United States still. We don't have a lot of those trappings. I mean,
the aisle is physical and there's, you know, yeah, Democrats and Republicans.
Like,
I feel
like it's a rare time where we see our government on display in this very like mm-hmm. public and forward facing type of thing and who they invite. There's a lot of all that pomp
every
and circumstance,
January.
You know, aligned with that. So I always like to watch it for that. Plus, you know, Michelle always looks good, which she did last night as well. Appreciate that. So that was, I always like to see that and to watch Paul Ryan not clap for curing cancer.
Fucking kids cancer.
Not clap for universal pre-K. I get that you don't like the president. That's fine.
Kids and cancer?
But he's talking about curing cancer and that doesn't even get a clap. Like,
and that's what I'm talking about. Like that's when I had to stop. Because it's just like, at this point, you guys are just being dicks.
The only universal clap that there was when it was talking about the military. Literally, the only time. Mm-hmm.
There was like a little reluctant.
Like, oh, we have the strongest military. It was like, our men and women. Because even when the president said, we have the strongest military in the world. Nobody can touch us. We spend 8 times more than any other nation on the planet. That didn't even get a fucking clap.
No.
Literally, it was astounding to watch and not surprising, but still it's always just like unsettling. There was one funny part where the president said, what did he say, Drew? He said something about bureaucracy.
About making stuff up. What was it? Gosh darn it. It was the hashtag. You're peddling fiction. What was that?
No, that's not what I'm talking about. He said something about that we need to get rid of the red tape and bureaucracy in government. And right when he said it, the camera cut to Kim Davis.
Oh, right.
And it was fucking, it was like, I literally
priceless.
Stopped it.
Priceless.
I was like, Drew, you have to find this. Because it was so, so funny. I was like, all right, good on you, cameraman.
That was Fox.
Good job.
That was Fox News.
I think everybody did. It was pretty funny.
And that was the other thing, too. Like, when I heard she was there, I was just like, oh, my God.
It's beyond. That's
you just,
yeah.
You just get to the, yeah. You just get to the point. You're like, are you serious? Yeah. You guys really
Kim Davis. And the congressman from Ohio's excuse is like, I wasn't trying to make a political statement. But like, she's not even from Ohio.
Yeah, dude.
She's not even from. She's not even from Ohio.
So what were you trying to do then? If it wasn't a political statement.
He liked her haircut. He liked her haircut. So he invited her.
That Vine's at 4,000 views. Right. We're approaching 5,000.
One thing the president did in the speech was he kind of laid out this the crux of the speech was really talking about the future and what he saw for the country. So he says, and I'm going to read directly from the speech. He says, let's talk about the future and 4 big questions that we as a country have to answer, regardless of who the next president is or who controls the next Congress. So he has these 4 questions. The first is how do we give everyone a fair shot at opportunity and security in this new economy? And the second is how do we make technology work for us and not against us, especially when it comes to solving urgent challenges like climate change? The third is how do we keep America safe and lead the world without becoming its policeman? And finally, how do we make our politics reflect what's best in us and not what's worse? Mm. That was kind of the crux of the majority of the speech, was kind of breaking down each of those questions and what he saw and what he thought, you know, we should be focused on. He got a big kind of push from a quote that he said that that food stamps. Let me make sure I get this right.
Can you guys hear the problematic white dog we have in the
back? That's not our dog.
Yeah, it is.
No, it's not. No,
oh, that's
no,
yours. Oh, shit. That sounds like our dog.
No, it's a black dog. It's okay to blame the black dog this time.
No, our dog is black, but she acts like a problematic white woman all the time.
And she be barking so just like that all the time.
She does that all the time. She's very troublesome. She's sleeping right now, though. He said food stamp recipients didn't cause a financial crisis. Recklessness on Wall Street did. And that kind of got, like, the biggest bump. I think people were really into that. And then the other thing he said, that anyone claiming that America's economy is in decline is peddling fiction. I think those were, for me, those were the big broad things that he talked about. I thought it was an interesting speech. I mean, I have my gripes with many portions of it, but I thought it would, those questions I think are very interesting, and certainly I think there's a lot of meat there for other folks to jump on and cover. And I think it gives us a little window into what his plans are when he leaves office as well, that those are the things he thinks are the most important. I think we'll see citizen and former President Obama looking in those areas also.
Uh-huh. I think they're good questions that, like, the next presidents won't answer.
No, they definitely won't.
So I think, you know, that's like I said, I'm just tired of politics. Like, yeah. I just can't wait till he's out of office.
So I can't, you know, I'm dreading this entire year of I mean, we've got like 20 days till Iowa caucus, and as I see the endorsements coming in, none of them are going the way they think. Like, Move On just endorsed Bernie, and then we've got I think a big union just endorsed Hillary. This looks like it's going to come down to the fucking wire. Like, I really don't know what's going to happen.
I think
for Hillary is like she doesn't operate well when she's not the front runner. She's that's the kind of politician that she is. She does best when she is on the offense all the time and not having to play defense, because she makes big mistakes when she has to play defense. She did it in 2008, and I fear she's going to do it again. She's teetering as it is, in my opinion.
I think the thing for me with Hillary is, does she at least know how the damn delegate system works this time? Because that to me was the biggest issue I had with her campaign in 2008, other than the racism. They didn't know how the delegate system worked. They didn't understand that it wasn't winner take all.
Right.
and Obama did. And so I was like, yeah, you guys do realize that, right? Because I remember after DR, was it Puerto Rico, whatever that, and Terry McAuliffe, I think it was her like chief of staff, and he was basically on Morning Joe drunk as shit. You could tell he had been drinking that rum.
Oh,
and it was just like, dude, you're delusional. You're like, you don't understand how the delegate system works. Like, you guys never understood how the delegate system works. At this point, like, because I keep getting asked, I'm like, I probably just won't vote in my primary because I don't care.
Right.
I saw someone yammer at somebody on Twitter about that today. Yesterday, voting.
So my whole thing has come down to this. Like, when it comes to politics, like, I don't trust politicians. I just don't. Like,
nor should we.
Yeah, no, we shouldn't. I mean, that's what we were getting to when I was talking to you earlier on Twitter. Like, I have no problem with people that criticize Obama who actually are working to push, like, policies and change the way you need to. Because I feel like when you're doing that and you're somebody who does that, like, your job is to never trust politics. Because you can't. That's just the nature of the beast. It's basically your job.
Literally.
Your job is to always make sure that they do that. So I get that. My problem is a bunch of people who say they do that, but then are now on the Bernie train. Mm. And I'm just like, hey, guys, listen, though. Bernie ain't going to be the liberal you think he's going to be, just like Obama wasn't the liberal you thought he was going to be. It's just like, that's not the president. He can't do that. It's just not going to happen.
Right. It's a lot of pie in the sky stuff with these fucking feel the burn crazies.
Burnouts.
Right. Right. Like, it was like the hope and change. Like, the hope and change stuff was not what got me to vote for Obama. I thought it was nice. It was great. But what got me, you know, to vote for Obama was the fact that he would actually go out there into Iowa and them cornfields full of white people, stand in the back of a truck, you know, and talk to white people. I was like, oh, okay, you're actually going to try to do the politician thing and win this. All right, cool. Just like my a problematic thing with Bernie, but that actually makes me feel better about him, his gun votes. Like, the way he votes about in guns in his state, I'm like, no, I got it.
Yeah,
you know how to play the game. You're just playing, folks. I see how you do it. All right, cool. Like, that's some fucked up shit. Yeah. But at least I know how you, I know you, you know the game you're going to have to play. His supporters, though, don't get that. And it's going to be hilarious when he wins and they're waiting for that universal health care or they're waiting for that free college and it doesn't come because, well, he's president now, or when they're waiting for him not to drop drones on suspecting terrorists and there's collateral damage. Oh, I can't wait for them to say that shit. I'm like, what, you guys thought he was different?
Well, yeah, even Obama, I think, you know, the largest gripe I heard from, you know, various white people, like, you know, if it wasn't racist griping, there was a, he promised a lot and underdelivered. It was like, yeah, but, you know, it should be obvious that what he promised was impossible. And then you got gridlocked in a Congress that was impossible and more fucking, you know, filibusters than had ever been used in the entire fucking history.
I just always like to say, like, you don't get to be president of the United States because you don't want to be a politician. Period. Right. It's just not what happens. If you have gone through the trouble of doing all the things that lead you to want to hold this particular office, you're a fucking politician. It's what you want to do. And all that comes along with it. You understand that. You didn't get into politics to not be in politics. Like, that's not how it works.
And the smart ones who
I'm going to run for president as an outsider.
They don't run for president.
No, they don't run for fucking president.
People wonder why. Oh, I can't believe Elizabeth Warren didn't want to run. She knows.
Exactly.
She
knows
she don't want no fucking mess with that shit.
She does not want to ruin her good name running for president.
Hell no.
This early in her political career. She knows how it works. It's like you can't do that. There's so much stuff you can't do. Like I was telling people today, I was like, listen, U.S. foreign policy is a fucking mess. And I don't care how liberal you are, when you become president, you get read in, you find out how much of a fucking mess it is. Good luck, dude. I wouldn't want to do that shit. That's why I don't run for fucking president. It's crazy. You have to have, unless you're going to just say every person, every president there, I'm going to push this way, and I am not going to get caught up in the rhetoric. You have to do that, or you just got to be like me and just be like, fuck it. Which is where I'm at. I'm with the fuck it.
You know, fuck it.
But like, I can't stand these people that sit there and go, oh well, no, I can't stand Obama because of the drones. I'm like, yeah, okay. Perfect example of this. Dude was telling me, you guys are just, you know, he retweeted some guy, but he was talking about how, yeah, Obama is just not this greatest president you guys think he is. I mean, you know, he could have done more. He could have pushed, Congress more and done everything like that. I'm like, all right, cool. But then he listed FDR as the president. I'm like, wait a minute. You mean the guy who locked up Japanese Americans during World War II? That's the guy you're going for.
This rewriting of history is like incredible to me when we see that stuff. The thing is that whoever is a leader of this particular country is going to always do fucked up shit. We're an imperialist capitalist nation, and we use our might everywhere that we go. So it doesn't matter who's in the office, quite frankly. When they go into that situation room and the Joint Chiefs of Staff tells them, hey, this is what's going on, and this is the consequences, and these are the pros and cons, and this is what we need to do, and this is how we protect our interests. Whoever is sitting at that desk is going to say the same fucking answer. I don't care if they're a GOP. I don't care if they're a Democrat. I don't care if they claim they're independent. It doesn't matter. Because when push comes to shove, the nation that they represent, these are the true ideals of that nation. And it's just a fact. It just is what it is. So none of those arguments ever make any sense to me. Like when I challenge a president, it's not Barack Obama. It's the presidency and all that it represents and all that come along with the decisions that that lawmaker actually does. And it doesn't matter who's there. Whoever is going to be sitting in that chair or behind that desk is going to be doing the same bullshit because that's what we do.
Unless you want to change from the bottom, you know, the bottom up, which I think is starting to happen a little bit.
We're
starting
Absolutely. To
see more of that, which is what I would push more people for. Like everybody's talking about who you voting for in president. I'm like, well, who the fuck are you voting for in Congress?
Yeah, ask them who's running for judgeships in their county. Ask them who's going to be sitting on their school boards next year. Ask them about the things that actually make direct change on the ground for people in their lives. Because trying to think that Bernie is going to be the solution to every fucking problem, especially when every question you ask him, you get the same goddamn answer. Let's just, with the
We're
going to
start a political revolution.
What
the fuck
is he talking about?
Okay, Bernie, sure, whatever. And it's people think I'm bashing him. I'm like, I'm not. It's just that every time I'm practical about Bernie Sanders, his fans get so upset about it. I'm just like, yo, I'm not saying that I wouldn't vote for him. I'm just saying that I don't believe half the shit he's saying. Well, how can you not? Like the thing today started because the guy was like, well, I don't see how you can't how you can't be excited about Bernie Sanders. I'm like, why would I be? He had to be pushed to say Black Lives Matters. I'm like, the fuck you, like, did I make that shit up? You know, at least with Hillary, I know what I'm getting with Hillary. Mm. Like, that's actually the one thing that's actually warmed me up to Hillary Clinton. I'm like, oh, you haven't changed. You're the same person. You're predictable. I know what you are. Okay. Like, you're a known quantity. You know, I can deal with that. And when you talk about Hillary Clinton supporters go, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, you're right. Exactly. Because they know that shit. They ain't stupid. They're like, yeah, we know.
Devil you know.
Exactly. And I'm like, that's cool. That's fine. At least you know and you're accepting of that. And that's fine. And I just want Bernie Sanders supporters to be the same way. It's like, listen, his vote on – he's had a very safe – he's a very safe senator. He can afford to have the votes he has and vote the way he has because, you know, he's not going to lose his seat for voting that way.
Right.
And there was some of that same knock against Obama when he first ran, is that he was not given it easier. But, you know, politically speaking, it's easier if you have less tenure and less skeletons in your closet.
Mm-hmm. Right. And the other thing, too, I can't stand what they do with Obama is they just completely ignore the racism that has plagued his presidency.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's just everything. Like, it's simple things that I believe the next president will be able to do that Obama couldn't do. And it won't be because, well, see, this is all you need to do. You just need to use your bully pulpit. It's not that.
Oh, no. It's definitely not.
He's not black.
He's not black.
Let's not pretend the Tea Party movement didn't exist solely and specifically because of his presidency.
Let's not pretend that John Boehner didn't take office saying his only goal was to stop everything and anything that Barack Obama
for real.
Let's not pretend he got elected the majority of the
House. Like, yeah, my entire purpose is to obstruct everything he does.
Yeah. Shit, I remember like one of the first things he did that happened in President Barack Obama's presidency, and it might have been in the first 100 days. It actually involved police. Is when Skip Gates,
right?
And Obama just had a real moment. He's like, well, you know, I think we can all agree that the Cambridge police acted stupidly. Yo. The media, the Republicans, they went fucking nuts.
Police, he apologized nuts. To that dude.
He did.
They had a fucking beer summit.
It's ridiculous.
Like, come on. Like, it's just the simplest things he does.
It's dangerous. He's gonna get police officers killed.
By Skip and his cane.
He can't even get a budget. No, like, every time the budget thing comes up, I'm sitting at work going, huh, wonder if it's going to be a work stoppage in the government.
Budget, smudge it. They shut the whole fucking kit and caboodle down over the fucking debt ceiling, dude. Twice the fiscal cliff. Mm-hmm. They no problem, no fucking problem. Like, doing this is going to cost us money. Moody's is going to downgrade our stock from AAA to AA. It's literally going to cost the country a lot of fucking money. I don't care. Defund Obamacare.
When it comes to things like, you have to have John Stewart to get 9/11 responders.
Yeah.
Like medical care. And that's been happening for and what is it? Like they're what? How many there's like what is it? Attorney generals?
Yep.
I think that he can't get confirmed.
Yeah, but he had all of these judgeships that wouldn't get passed. It was really like obscene, and it's only because he was black. I mean, there's no explanation for it. He gets it added in the speech.
How long was Loretta Lynch's fucking?
Oh, please.
Was it months?
The longest ever. The longest ever.
100 and something days? Like, crazy.
And
like,
they swear, Eric
Eric had to keep the job long. He's like, dude, I retired. The fuck? Yeah,
confirmer. Come on.
Yeah, and they swear it's, oh, well, no, you know, like, Morning Joe, George, what happened to Bush? Like, yeah, Bush got us into two fucking wars.
Exactly.
And did a bunch of bullshit. That's why people were a little upset at Bush.
You know, yeah, and gave us
fries.
Yeah, and gave us fucking John Roberts and Clarence Thomas. Look. There's plenty of reason to be concerned about anything that George Bush was putting up.
Right. Obama gives us health care, you know,
but,
you know, makes us, you know, and tries, you know, allows gays, you know, in the military, and all of a sudden it's, oh my God, allows gay people to get married, and all of a sudden it's a fucking problem. And that's what you're upset about? Like, I don't know, man. They don't seem to add up to me, you know?
Everything about the way the public, you know, what do they call that? The Overton window deal. Everything about the public's willingness to discourse about President Obama, including just calling him Obama, dropping president, all dropping Mr., dropping all the normal salutations during, like, you know, sanctioned state dinners and shit. They'll be up on TV calling Obama this, Obama that. No one would ever fucking say W or Bush. No one would ever do that shit. Never. The air of, if you talk back against the president, it's like if you have a disagreement or opinion during a time of war or this, that, it's un-American. Traitors. It's you're a traitorous. It's un-American. How dare you? Like on The View, like all these TV shows were really like adamant about you can't talk bad about President Bush during this time. It's not good for the country. Yet those same people at any fucking drop of the night will fucking, you know, shit all over President Obama all goddamn day up and down without a fucking care. It's so clearly about race. It's got nothing else to do other than that. Just the willingness to talk bad about a black man.
Absolutely. We renamed French fries Freedom Fries because the French didn't want to go to war in Iraq with
Seriously.
Us. Like, we literally took our bowl and went home. And there was a big thing about, like, there were, like, some senators who were pouring French wine in the rivers. Like, it was the dumbest thing
Stupid.
Ever. And it's just like, are you guys serious? Are you guys really doing this? It's like, crazy. That's why the funniest thing right now to happen to me right now, I'm watching right now, is seeing Trump cannibalize the party and turn and go at Cruz for not being an American.
It's
not
hilarious.
Being born American.
Oh, the leader of the birthers. I mean, Trump took up the mantle, but as far as inside mm-hmm. government, Cruz was the birther dude. And to see it backfiring on him is delicious. But I saw this really funny story about a gentleman named Donald Pugh in Lima, Ohio. So you know how nowadays these police departments, they put up, like, on Facebook, they have, like, a Facebook page, and they put up people that are wanted to try and get leads and shit like that, which I actually find funny in and of itself. But Lima, Ohio put up a picture of Donald Chip Pugh because he failed to report and appear for several cases, including arson and vandalism. And he was unhappy with the picture that they put up.
You mean like the Facebook post?
The Facebook post itself. It was his actual mugshot. And he sent them an image of himself sitting in a car wearing sunglasses with the comment, quote, "Here's a better photo. That one is terrible."
Dude took a selfie and sent it to him?
Yes.
Like on the lam, like while like out on a warrant. Like, dude, that picture is awful. Here you go.
He then went on an Ohio radio station, The Eagle, in which he claimed that the Lima police, quote, "did me wrong." He says, "They put a picture out that made me look like I was a Thundercat or James Brown on the run. I can't do that," end quote.
A Thundercat or a fucking James Brown on the run?
That's
too much, dude. That's
hey,
awesome.
Listen, sometimes, I mean, I feel them, man. I don't take good pictures either. So it's like, they probably put a wrong picture of you, man. I mean, just saying.
Just that he didn't give a shit that people knew he was arrested for arson or vandalism. He didn't want to be out there looking crazy.
You know that is that's like some sort of like perverse version of "if they gun me down." Like if they put a warrant, like, yo, use this picture. I don't. Yeah, that's a terrible ass picture.
The police did respond saying, "We thank Pugh for being helpful, but now we would appreciate if he would come speak to us at the police station about his charges." So far, he has not been caught. So, I mean, the new picture is good. I just think it's hilarious.
It would be great. As if
I want to know
like
who told him about it. Who was like, "Yo, Donald, they got you out here looking a mess on Facebook."
What are the things kids do where they take the little the cardboard cutout around and they take pictures of it all over the place?
Oh, Flat Stanley?
Yeah, dude, he should have a fucking
Flat
like
Donald.
Just Donald. Just like he should have pictures of him like at the fucking like hot dog stand, like fucking all kinds
How
of shit.
How about this
dude.
One, Lima Police?
How about this one? Here I am at fucking what's the amusement park in Ohio?
It's in Sandusky, right?
Yeah,
I don't know
that?
The name of it though.
Whatever that is. How about the theme park? Click.
Yeah.
So we talked earlier about different protests and things that are like having a brand in building, and BYP is doing great stuff in Chicago. And I think, is that who was behind the Black Friday protests on Michigan Avenue?
Yes.
I thought so. And so they had marches and different actions. And there's, you got to put the link up because there's a woman that they have a picture of course, you know, a bunch of cops on bikes and then some shoppers. And this one woman is just like, she almost looks like that meme where it's like, they made fun of me. This is what slavery must have felt child, like a white girl crying with a mascara running. Yeah. It's kind of on that line. Like, she's like, I can't believe this is Black Friday's ruined. Activists blocked different Michigan Avenue on North Michigan Avenue, which is referred to as the Magnificent Mile, and it's got among the most expensive retail space in all of the country, certainly in Chicago.
Literally, in Chicago for sure.
Certainly in Chicago, top 10 in the country. Yeah. And so they had to move around through the activities, and they did indicate that sales were down 25% to 50% below projections. And this is from the Michigan Retail Association, Michigan Mile Retail Association. So it certainly had an impact, and I know people like to debate and argue, like, whether that impact, you know, what was the purpose, what was the value. So I think, you know, the more pain that is felt, the more likely shit's going to get done. I think that's a kind of like a known equation, if I'm not mistaken. And I thought this was significant. You're talking about retail sales being down 25% to 50%. That can't continue, right? That and the only real option is to start respecting some of the demands and having changes. You know, Chicago's terrible. Holman Square, all kinds of shit. Laquan, we know how bad Chicago is, how needed BYP's actions are. Or they can escalate and look really bad, embarrass themselves like they did in Fergus and other places.
Well, we know what they're going to do then.
Right. I mean, what's your take, Leslie? When I think when some people hear this, I think white people specifically, and I'm asking you as your white husband, because I do. I hear this a lot from white folks, like, oh, I just, you know, wish they wouldn't have impacted that, and you know, what purpose does it do? And doesn't do any good. But you know, we're talking about it, and I'm sure it got felt, and I'm sure retailers are going to talk about it, and you know, if they can get pressure to the retailers, and retailers can get pressure to Rahm and other people in charge, change can't happen, right?
Yeah, I mean, the two things I always mention is one, like there's a piece of theater that's involved with these types of demonstrations and you know, coordinated action, generally speaking. And so this hits a lot of different areas in that regard. You know, we're talking about confronting capitalism. We're talking about confronting those in a city where black people are, you know, under the boot of not just police, but also the economic engine of a city, and confronting it in the richest area, the place where all the money is and all of the privilege is concentrated. So that's an important piece. But the other part of it is, I always like to remind people, is that, you know, we're in the streets not because we want to be. We're in the streets because that's the access that we have currently. That's the leverage that we're able to pull. That's the lever that we can employ. If we had access to the rooms that make decisions, that's where we would be. And increasingly, that's our goal, is to get into those rooms. But right now, the streets, we're there because that's the access we have. And that's the pressure point that we can apply in our current society. So I don't really buy any of the arguments about who's hurt by this and not hurt by it. It doesn't make any sense to me because of those two factors. So that's my general standard answer when people complain about those types of things. So
fair.
I don't know.
Well, like I said, there's no reason these things aren't going to continue. I think that's a given. And I think that we've talked before on the podcast, the sooner people kind of realize that, like, you know, what was the year of resistance and,
yep.
You know.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. The other thing I wanted to follow up on, Chris, I'm sure you've heard about Flint, Michigan, and the water situation there, which has been fucking ads. Which is
time,
which has been, you know, obviously reported in the news. For folks that don't know, the city of Flint, Michigan has been in a water crisis. The governor had city officials take over, or state officials take over the city, and they made a decision to allow water to be removed, water source for the city to be moved from Detroit, which had some additional filtering, to the Flint River, which didn't have that, and it led to
save money.
And
you say, I want to make it very clear, the state appointed a single individual, yeah, because in a city where there's an economic crisis, where they're kind of like debts are over and under or whatever it is, like Detroit's filing for bankruptcy, when that happens, the state of Michigan can appoint a single individual, yeah, non-elected, mm-hmm, single individual, to, in the emergency management mode, take care of the things in the city. Here in the state of Michigan, I think it's over half of, is it 75% of black residents live in a state of emergency city?
Yeah.
Like literally like 70 some odd percent, right, of black Michigan residents.
Flint itself is 56% black, which is so far above the national average. It's hard not to understand what role that would play in the decision being made to change its water source to a lead contaminated city water supply. And so the entire city and residents have been poisoned by this water. They have side effects, and especially the children, developmental issues, physical issues, literally lesions, hair loss, cognitive issues that potentially could not ever be erased. And the governor knew all of this stuff was possible, but was okay with it happening there. And to add insult to injury, I'm going to just play a real quick clip from Melissa Harris-Perry to talk about this just shocking piece.
We now bring you to Flint, Michigan, a city that is under a state of emergency after its water supply was poisoned by toxic lead. Now, this is a story that is part public health catastrophe and part political scandal. Because back in April 2014, emergency managers working for Michigan Governor Rick Snyder decided to save money by switching Flint from Detroit's water system over to a new drinking water source. And that new water source was the Flint River. And the water corroded the city's pipes, and it flowed through those pipes, and lead from those pipes leached into the system. Residents complained immediately about the color and taste of their water, but the state did not switch back to Detroit's water system for more than a year and a half. Last month, it was...
I'm going to stop there just for 1 second for people to quite understand that this was brown water coming out of their pipes that they couldn't use, they couldn't drink, they couldn't wash with it, they weren't supposed to, they really couldn't eat with it, and if you don't have a choice, what else are you going to do?
For a year and a half. And you could taste it.
Literally.
Discovered that the percentage of the city's infants and children with above average lead levels had nearly doubled. This was devastating news for the people of Flint because the neurological damage and behavioral effects of lead poisoning are believed to be irreversible. This Tuesday, Governor Rick Snyder declared a declaration of emergency, and the same day the U.S. Attorney's Office confirmed it is investigating the case. For the residents of Flint, such actions came much too late, and a message they sent loud and clear on Friday when Flint protesters gathered in the rain to call for their governor's resignation and arrest for the state's mishandling of the water crisis there. Even now, at this moment, health experts say the water is too toxic to drink. And I'm joined now by one of the residents who's taking action to address the situation in Flint. Lenice Lawson, with the help of volunteers and donations, is distributing bottles of water to our community. Good morning, Lenice.
So that's the background on it.
Now, and just, you hear that one stat? They doubled in one decision in one period of time. I think it was a 3 year period, year. How long did they have this water?
A year and a half.
Year and a half. So in 18 months, they doubled the number of lead. Case of individuals exhibiting heightened levels of lead, beyond the acceptable levels of lead in their system. Doubled the number of cases in a population with one fucking decision.
And what's more disturbing is that they are continuing to charge the citizens of Flint
for that shit,
for that water. They are
toxic ass water.
Today, even today, issued and sent out past due notices.
Can you imagine that?
Poisoned water.
Insult to injury, literally.
I saw that about them sending out the notices, and I'm just like, you got it. So here's the thing that gets me about this. This is not the first time I've heard something like this. I want to say it was West Virginia or somewhere like that where they were doing the whole, I think it was fracking for natural gas, and those residents actually had flammable water.
Right. And I guess it's not a problem.
Right.
Go ahead.
Yeah, it's just, it's one of the things that you think about and you're like, how did you guys let that happen? And I don't mean the government. Like, it's not like the government didn't know.
Right.
That this wasn't happening. It's like, how did you, and it's always the most poor and the people that can't, don't have the power to get by. Like, I saw somebody earlier today was like, well, why don't they just go out there and buy bottled water? I'm like, because bottled water is expensive.
You're going to fucking bathe in it? You're going to flush your toilet in it? You're going to fucking wash your face in it?
That's not a valid, like, I shouldn't have to do that. I should be able to just,
They're the same assholes.
Drink my water, yeah.
When you have a complaint about an area, like, oh, you know, this place is horrible. Move. Really? Fuck you.
Do you know what? These are the same people. I guarantee you if we said that we needed money to, like, build a well in Malawi, they would be like, oh, we got to help these poor Africans.
Sure.
Like,
yeah,
dead
you're
ass.
Right.
The type of individual that would be, like, on board with that would look at the people of Flint and be like, ah, well, you shouldn't let your town
shouldn't
fail.
Live there. Yeah.
Whatever. Ugh, it's infuriating. I expect you and I will be doing some action on
yeah,
that.
Yeah, Flint's
soon.
Been close by.
It's pretty
we're,
close to
we're
us.
Gonna have to get.
I don't want. Yeah, that. So it's one of those things that just that's like you can't believe that in the United States we have to deal with something like that.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It's the truth.
I've sadly heard of this shit before.
It's crazy.
You know?
I say all the time, environmental justice is racial justice because mm-hmm. every environmental issue that exists on the globe affects poor Black and Brown people first and worst.
Sure, yeah.
So it just
look,
is a fact.
Our neighborhood, you know, we've decide to live in a Black neighborhood and there ain't food for shit.
No,
there's not fresh food for shit nowhere.
Well, that's food security. That's not environmental. But well, it's
enough.
The same thing. All of those things.
So, on the, I guess, update, when we talk about the Oregon militia.
These motherfuckers.
So,
Chris, can you even believe that these fuckers are still out there? This is insanity.
Yes.
I mean, I can believe it because it's, I mean, what else?
Once you get by with, the first time.
Oh, yeah, you're right. With the whole, like, pulling the fucking mm-hmm. guns on the. On the federal agents, yeah. Mm-mm.
Well, so they had that laundry list of shit they wanted, some supplies.
I'm going to just read a few things from the list because I find it fucking hilarious.
You want to read that first?
Yeah, let me go through a few, just a few.
Start with what they asked for.
This is the shit that they asked for people to send. Warm blankets, sleeping bags, and jackets, and thermals. Because, you know, taking over a outdoor wildlife refuge in Oregon, you wouldn't bring those with you. They want...
Come on, y'all. This is hard and cold, man.
They want Miracle Whip, mayonnaise, mustard, ketchup. Apparently, condiments are in high demand.
You really said Miracle Whip and mayonnaise?
Both.
Come on.
They want them both.
Miracle Whip and
they
mayonnaise?
They want them both.
Oh, come on. Stop it. Ranch dressing? No?
They didn't say ranch.
They asked for cheese, didn't they?
They want hot dogs and brats.
And brats.
They want them both, you guys.
Hot dogs and brats.
Both. They need boxer briefs in large and extra large.
Well, I've got...
Of course, they forgot to pack their fucking underwear.
Not tiny whities? Boxer briefs?
No.
Is it boxer briefs, not boxers?
It just says boxer briefs.
Okay. I'm a boxer brief man. I might have to change. Yeah, I did not know that was the preferred underwear of the Oregon militia.
They need razors? I thought they liked beards. I'm confused by that. I don't know. They need deodorant. I bet they do.
Stat. Mm-hmm. That looks like a smelly occupation.
This is a very specific request. They need a Midland radio from Walmart.
Why a Midland radio?
Why from Walmart?
That's how we make the bombs.
They need throw rugs, any size, for all the doorways.
Let's get some decorum and some class up in here,
guys.
This wildlife refuge. We got all the fucking M16s over here. We need a throw rug to pull the M16s together.
Listen, guys, white privilege is hard.
It's tough out here.
Throw rugs?
They need 4-inch aprons, APRANS. This is their list. They need they need antibacterial hand soap because they can't deal with they cannot deal with it.
You know what? I'm sitting here and I just, you know, I really wish that I could wipe down the desk here with some antibacterial. Someone please.
They need propane tanks and portable heaters. Now, what kind of rugged outdoor people are these? I just want to know. And they need, just for you, Chris, both shredded and sliced cheese. They want them both.
I'm surprised they didn't have, like, I want an Amazon gift card. I want, like, a loaf pan from Williams-Sonoma.
Listen, I was waiting for the cheese because you can't have that many white people.
Two kinds.
And no cheese.
French vanilla creamer. Again, very specific. French vanilla creamer. And finally, because of course, why not?
You know, it'll be the best.
They need Marlboro Red 100s. They need Marlboro Light 100s. They need Pall Mall Menthol 100s and Chew Copenhagen. That's what they need.
I would troll them out the hell and send them like non-French creamer, right? Just like regular ass creamer. Like, sorry, guys.
I just think it's hilarious that they have two kinds of cheese and both Miracle Whip mayonnaise because it says that somebody actually had a fight about that. And before this list came out, they're like, nope, they both got to go on there.
So they've been receiving packages, uh-huh. And I'll let John Ritzheimer.
What's going on, everybody?
Explain
so
it.
And picked up some mail that came in from a lot of the supporters, but along with that mail, we got an abundance of the hate mail, and it was really mind blowing to me that people would actually spend their money. You know, this box right here, $17.90. They spend and waste their money on all this hateful stuff to send out here to us. and buy this ridiculous stuff.
Hold on. He pulled up a fucking 14-inch dildo. Send us this ridiculous stuff. It's not just like a dildo. It's like the hugest, like, longest, like, double-ended dildo.
I want to send them a dildo.
A $17 box. And they sent dildos.
I want to send them a dildo.
So, John, he's
upset about this.
We had a list.
All right.
Miracle Whip, mayonnaise, sliced cheese, and shredded cheese. I did not hear double-ended 14-inch dildo. Mm.
It's really ridiculous. Even this one was really funny. A bag of dicks.
of dicks.
Rather than going out and being good, you know, they just spend all their money on hate and hate and hate and hate.
Hey, bags of dicks are not necessarily hate. I just want to say.
Y'all, emphatically, I'm not going to give him any more time. But no. So he's mad, people. Mm. He's mad. Stop sending dildos, y'all. Mm-hmm. I just thought it was funny that someone really sent dildos. I'm talking about trolling them by sending them, like, the wrong creamers.
Send them, like, I don't know. I got to look at that list and, like, find the opposite. Like, send them all extra small boxer briefs.
Extra small tidy whities.
Extra small tidy whities. The opposite of what they want.
Throw rugs that don't.
Shredded lettuce.
Throw rugs that don't match nothing.
What I love about this is, because it just goes back to the whole thing about, you know, these guys are so white privileged, and they talk so much about how they, you know, they talk so much about how they don't, what am I trying to say? They always make it seem like whenever something like this happens, they're like, well, we're just fighting for the regular man.
Right.
We're just trying to do the regular
thing.
They're
every guy out there.
You're not regular. Like,
no.
You have too much money. You know, you have too much access that other people don't have. Like, I don't understand how they think they can get they can say this shit. I'm like, you're not regular people.
No, they're so not regular people. And it's funny to me because those white people that you mentioned earlier, Drew, that asked you about the protests on Michigan Avenue, they don't have any problems with these dudes, though, which I find I have found it very interesting.
Oh, no,
it
goes. I've had worse. We talked about it last week. The dudes that were literally straight up like Black Lives Matter, angry, racist, violent movement. These guys in Oregon are doing it right. Like, literally straight out the same tweet, dude.
They're doing it right.
And like, they'll even say, like, you know, you could learn something. You know, that's how you get stuff done. You guys should do stuff like that. You should respect that they're fighting against government tyranny. They're on your side, too. Really?
All right. Amy, really? Really?
They're a splinter of a fringe of a narrow of a really fucking like that, way out there mindset
that was started by white supremacists.
Let's be
real.
And Mormons that believe
I'm
in
not
like
even making that
like,
up. That's
what was the conspiracy agency 21 or fucking the UN fucking conspiracy?
It's
not bagger.
It's nuts. Yeah.
Well, it's not only that, but it's like I'm just tired of these people. These white middle Americans, as we call them, these white middle class people who have like hundreds of acres of land, can afford a small arsenal,
right?
Acting like, you know, they don't have money. Mm. Like, it's just like, what do you mean?
It's ridiculous.
What do you mean you're just fighting for the smaller man? It's like, I don't have that kind of money. Like, what the
for
fuck?
Real?
Like, these are people that make like that can make up to six figures talking about some. I can't, you know, do this. I got 10 trucks and 100 acres of land, but I'm just a regular guy.
Yeah, no, bro. The two different things, and they've gotten conflated to some degree, but Eamon Bundy and Clive and Bundy and all them fucking guys, they're protesting, not paying a like wickedly subsidized grazing fee, right? Like they're pissed about paying a 97% discount off of the grazing fees to the Bureau of Land Management and the federal government. And they don't think they should, you know, respect anybody higher than the county sheriffs. That's one. Like they're mad about having to pay their fucking already subsidized to fuck taxes that everybody else fucking pays, right? That's them. These other dudes were from the Hammonds that burnt down like 200 fucking acres of shit that, you know, ostensibly control weeds and whatnot, but they did it so they could have more grazing for their fucking cattle. But they did it. They burnt all this fucking land and they got convicted and sentenced and, you know, court appears, all that jazz. And they literally are like, okay, we'll serve the jail time. You know, guilty. All right. We'll throw in the towel. We're going to stop fucking, you know, preening and prawning and whatever. And we're going to go in. And despite them still going to jail, these other guys are like, no, let's take the wildlife refuge. Come on, dude. Where is the fucking what? You're telling me that like literally Black Lives Matter is over actual like death and fucking genocide and fucking like real shit. This is the most manufactured fucking outrage, and they get all the fucking like peaceful protesters in Oregon take over wildlife refuge.
It's fucking ridiculous.
It's insanity. I wish it would end.
Grazing fees. When you can do grazing fees,
yeah. that means you have cattle.
Yeah, that means you have something that can graze.
Exactly.
Yep.
Oh, it's hilarious. They're always a victim. I swear, white people spend all their fucking time trying to figure out how they're the victim. It's
that's the best segue in the world. This week in Girl Please.
This week in Girl Please.
I know you got, I'm just going to sit back and enjoy. Chris, you might, I'm not saying you don't need to interject. As a white person, I've got nothing to say. I'm just going to.
This week in Girl Please. A white woman in Hungary named Boglara Balog, who says she travels the world and writes about human rights issues, decided to make a post that she morphed herself into tribal women to raise awareness of their secluded cultures. She literally did blackface 7 different times, y'all. 7 different times to quote unquote raise awareness of secluded cultures of black people in Africa.
The fuck?
I had to get that one too.
I don't even understand the like logic of why you yourself, Boglara, would be the one that needed to raise awareness of the secluded cultures. And then secondarily, why you think raising awareness would involve your visage ever?
Yeah, couldn't you?
If you want to raise awareness about a people, you know what you do? You lift up the fucking people that you're trying to raise awareness about. It's a pretty simple exercise in how you accomplish that goal, if that was your goal.
One of the blackface images was literally like she put her eyes, like literally like took her eyes, like the windows into the soul, and put them into the other woman image. That's raising awareness. Your eyes, really.
So the last insanity check I did was called "Get Your Shit Together, White People."
Yes,
we know.
I gotten so into other shit, I forgot I had this article, but this is another one that was supposed to be. Get your shit together, white people, because they've lost their goddamn minds in 2016. I'm sorry, Drew, but you're
no,
people, man.
No, man.
They've lost their minds in 2016, man.
This is indefensible, like, you know?
It's like they're, fuck it, you know what? We're going all out in 2016. Fuck it.
You know, though, this is really honestly, like, I don't mean to say this in a bad way, but, like, I'm where I am today, but over a period of time, like, I've had different understandings of all, but never in my life did I ever think the solution was blackface. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not saying I'm free of problematic shit, right? Like, I've been problematic. I really have. But, like, never fucking, like, not only have I never considered it, like, it hasn't even been, like, close to the realm of possibility. So I really, like, as a fellow white person, I just cognitively don't understand how you get to the leap, unless you're like trying to be offensive, or you're like, it's Halloween, I'm dressing up as Ray Rice or whatever. But like this, like, huh?
Nah, I mean,
I don't understand it. How does it happen?
It happens very simply. It happens when a white person cannot see beyond the centering of themselves. And so they really truly believe that the only way for them to do anything is that they have to start by centering themselves. There's no possible realm of any action that can occur.
And Blagvora thought her fans wanted to see her centered as well?
No, she wanted to see herself centered.
But she does this ostensibly for a living. It's a blog and a shit. She's a travel blogger.
No, it got picked up. She's just a bored white woman. Let's stop with the fucking everything else you're trying to say she is. Because that's what she is. I will say she took it down and she says, I'm going to just read her words because I find them fucking hilarious.
Is this a, should I play the I'm sorry?
Yeah, this could be. I'm sorry.
We're going to jump the gun a little early. I didn't know. Is it Blagvora? What's her name?
Yeah, Blagvora. Boglara.
Boglaro. I know she apologized. Let's hear it.
She says, she didn't apologize. She says, since I had no intentions to offend anyone, and yet I'm not able to answer to all of you, I've decided to delete my post. My intention was 100% pure with this tribal art. Being a human right lawyer and journalist who knows pretty much about racism and similar issues, I have never imagined that my work will annoy so many people and that I will have to explain myself. And sure, I will not do that. Keep calm and love every human, you guys.
So let me just summation. My intent was... There's all lies. She ends with all lies matter. And what's the one in the middle?
The one in the middle is that she knows about racism.
Oh no, I'm gonna take my ball and go home. Yeah. Oh yeah. No, first it's
I was pure in my
intent. My intent was pure. I know what I'm doing. I know what I'm doing. Yeah. I'm a smart person.
Yeah.
And
let's love everybody.
All lives matter.
Yeah. So
Girl, please.
I'm
gonna take my sorry back. That was not
about you. How are you that involved? And you didn't know blackface, but I don't
understand. She's self-involved. That's what she's fucking involved with. Her goddamn self.
Those are actually you know what I'm beginning to realize? That those are the worst kind to me.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I can deal with the Donald Trumps of the world. Mm-hmm. I can deal with the outrages. I can even, but I can't deal with the, no, I'm on your side.
I'm really trying to help you.
Yeah, there was the for New Year's Eve, Chris Hemsworth and his wife and them. They dressed up as Native Americans, all right? Now, she posted on Instagram. Native American was explaining, hey, this is offensive to us. This is what's going on. Article gets posted right on Facebook. So then all the black people were just like, oh, yeah, you can't do that. It's basically blackface for Native Americans. That's wrong. It's like, I understand that people – it's one of those things where, you know, we think that as African Americans that we've gotten it bad. Native Americans get it really bad.
Oh, yeah.
And I think we're trying to understand that.
Horrible.
In come the white people. Well, I don't find it that offensive. Well, of course you don't, because it doesn't involve you, but you finding it offensive. Well, I'm not saying they can't be offended. I'm just saying I'm not offended by it.
I just thought this headdress looked pretty for Coachella.
Like, why do you need to announce that you're not offended then? I don't – what does that have to do with you? It's like even when they're trying to defend, you know, somebody else and be this, woke person and be so liberal progressive, they still have the center. If it's not centered on them, they can't, they don't understand. And so we spent the entire thread trying to explain to them, Mr. White Man, it doesn't involve you. You being offended has nothing to do with this.
We don't give a fuck how you feel.
I actually gave up finally on a dude that spent way too much time yesterday trying to convince me that the way in which he was trying to help wasn't being received the way
he used the words that you have to receive my help
unconditionally.
Literally was like, this dude is so fucking ass backwards. You give help with no expectation, asshole. You don't have conditional help offered to people.
He said, accept my help unconditionally. I said, oh, okay, well, you have a migraine and I bring over hemorrhoid cream. Are you going to accept that unconditionally? You're trying to twist these words around.
No, asshole, it's called a metaphor. So how about that, dumbass?
Well, so we had actually the actual this week in SARS was good governor in Maine.
This dude.
What's his name? Kyle Blaine?
LePage is his name.
Oh, okay.
This fucking nut job. Went to talk about drug trafficking in his state of Maine and had a slip up, making it clear that he was talking about this is what he said. He said, your comment is appropriate because I didn't say anything about black heroes, but the reporter pressed about his use of names because he said that these people come up from New York and Connecticut, D-Money, Smoothie, and Shifty.
Right.
Okay? This is what he said.
And then he said they impregnate white women.
Right.
And so that was – and this is his, I guess, apology we're putting up. Is this an apology? But this is what he said after this thing with the reporter.
Right.
Okay.
He said, yeah, what are they? Black? I don't know who they are. I just read the names. I get a report and they're saying his street name D-Money, street name Smoothie. I don't know where they're from. I don't know where they're from. I don't know if they're white, black, Asian. I don't know. Okay. He blamed adversarial bloggers in Maine for pushing the story. Folks, you are in the back pocket of Maine bloggers. Who knew bloggers had so much fucking power in Maine, you guys?
Black girl in Maine.
I know. Shame on you. Shame.
Her pen is mighty.
Mighty. It's just ridiculous. So his actual comment, his original comment was, these traffickers aren't the people who take the drugs. These are guys by the name of D-Money, Smoothie, and Shifty. These types of guys that come from Connecticut and New York. They come up here, they sell the heroin, then they go back home. Incidentally, half the time they impregnate a young white girl before they leave, which is the real sad thing, you guys, because then we have another issue that we have to deal with down the road.
And listen to his rebuttal. Instead of saying Maine women, I said white women. And I'm not going to apologize to the women of Maine for that. Because if you go to Maine, you'll see that essentially we're 95% white. That's his apology. That's his clarification. That is the like doubling down.
I'm glad he cleared that up.
Yes. In case we were wondering, guys.
I should have just said Maine women, wink, wink. We all know they're white. They're white, guys. Come on, guys. Oh, my God. It's not racist at all. I just read the names, Shifty and D-Money. They're street names. I don't know.
I don't even know what to say about it. Let's talk about some fucking cops.
Well, you know, is this week in apologies. I'm going to have to give that a DQ.
Oh, it gets a
DQ. That's a negative.
It's
a DQ.
He didn't even say the
word apology never came out.
Listen, he literally said the words, I'm not going to apologize. He literally said he was not going to apologize.
This, in fact, is no longer a DQ. This is a new one. This is the antithesis of apology.
The opposite of apology.
The exact opposite of apology. He specifically won't apologize.
I got to give him a little credit for that. you got to give him a little credit for not apologizing.
I will not apologize. Everyone knows Maine women are white.
Right. I mean, hey, I gotta give them some credit for that one, because you know, most times they'll actually give a worse, not apology. He was just like, oh no, I'm not apologizing.
He's like, I'm an old white dude from Maine, and nobody's gonna make me apologize for shit. Not up in here.
Before we jump into Yes on Cops, let's just. I have to.
Why? Should have played that when we talked about it.
I just had to. I'm sorry.
You and that song.
I know. It's. You know what, though? You took Ignition away, or I said R. Kelly took Ignition away.
Yeah, I didn't take
me.
Shit
you
away.
No. So, anyway. Bad boys, what you want? Yes, okay. You know what I should do, Leslie, is get 112 Peaches and Cream is my new. That'll be my new song from now on. So a Maryland cop is sentenced to 5 years for putting a gun to a man's head, says the victim should apologize to him. Really?
That makes sense.
Interesting. But that's the lead. I'm wondering how this cop's going to turn that around. So 5 days after he was convicted of putting a gun to a man's head outside his home for no apparent reason, former Prince George County, Maryland police officer was reported saying that the victim should apologize to him. If anything, they should be saying sorry to me because all he wanted was a payday. Huh? Prosecutors say that the call proves that Santiago is dangerous and not remorseful. Yeah, I'd say he is.
All he wanted was a payday. So you're saying that in the off chance that he could somehow get this videotaped and you didn't pull the actual trigger, because let's start with that possibility, which is that you didn't just put it to his head, but you actually just fucking killed him in his front lawn. On the off chance that all of those things happen, he was in it for a payday. He's like, well, this cop could either shoot me in the head, because that happens all the time, or I could get a payday. What? Like, what? Where?
And listen to the incident. So, this is what the reports are saying happened. So the officer Santiago was sentenced on Friday for the May 24 incident in which the 26-year-old had friends from New Jersey riding along with him in his police cruiser when he pulled over in front of William Cunningham's home in Bowie, Maryland. Cunningham was in a car with his cousin when Santiago repeatedly asked the men what they were doing and insisted they were parked illegally. Cell phone video released by the Prince George County Police Department shows Santiago pressing the two men even after they explained that Cunningham lived in the house and they had planned to get out of the car and go inside. As Cunningham headed to the front door of his home, the post notes that Santiago backed up, parked his cruiser, and ran after Cunningham, ordering him to return to the car, and then pulled out a gun, pointing at Cunningham's head and mouth, shouting, I dare you to fucking fight me, son. So he had buddies in the car he was going to show off for. And
he wanted a payday.
And Cunningham wants a payday?
By sitting outside his house in his car.
And he should apologize to you? Wait, to follow up this week in apologies with like a antithesis of apology to like the like worst demand for an apology I've ever heard in my life. What's the opposite of this week in apologies? This is like the worst week in apologies ever. How do you demand an apology from someone you assaulted and got convicted for?
But seriously, though, Chris, these cops, like the level of entitlement that they feel has reached. Like, when did this happen on the real? Like, what?
You want to know what it is? No, I think that the work you do, the work that all the producers, I think that's gotten to them. Because you got to think about it. It's just like when you challenge, because like we need a new word. I can't call. I don't want to call what cops have white privilege because it obviously goes way beyond.
Yeah, blue privilege.
And also, it doesn't matter what color you are either. Right. So.
It's like you said, blue privilege or whatever.
Yeah.
Because it's even because they even do this to white people, but white people are so like blinded by it that they focus so much on. Well, obviously, they just do it to black people. Whatever, but I think cops have gotten away with it for so long that the fact that they're now being challenged and even if it's not being held accountable all, like, it's being held accountable like 9% of the time.
Right.
It used to be 0% of the
time. It used to be they could do whatever the fuck they wanted
Right. to. Right, and it scares them shitless because so many of them became cops because they wanted the power.
Yeah.
And the idea of becoming a cop and doing a cop's job and not having the power that comes with it
scares the shit out of
them.
Yeah.
It no longer becomes a fun job to do,
right?
If you will, because it's shitty. It's like being a teacher. It's like you do. It can be rewarding, but you're gonna get shit pay, and you're gonna deal with a lot of shit. And you know, granted, you're making the world a better place, but to do it right means, you know, being thankless, and that's not the type of people that are becoming cops.
Yeah, hey, right. Hey, Jim, you could be a teacher and have 3 months off in summer, or you can be a cop and beat on people.
Right. Yeah, hopefully teachers have a little, they actually have more requirements to have that particular job than the police do. But
I mean, I bet you there's places where there's more fucking requirements to cut fucking hair.
I'm sure.
I know that people that do cut hair have to maintain like errors and emissions insurance in case they cut your ear and whatnot. Cops don't have to do that.
Wait, there was a thing about that, about like, they were trying to say that they were trying to, some place were trying to shut down on illegal hairstylists or some shit like
that.
Yeah,
this was, I think it was in Ohio. Fucking Ohio.
Yeah, Ohio is becoming the new fucking Florida.
They really
shit.
Are. They really are. Or Michigan's giving them a run. But yeah, I think you're right that they were shutting down. It was a black hairstylist that was getting shut down for like a 2 week lapse in their certification or whatever. And it was like the police in the same town have like no requirements for anything. They don't have to have a license for anything. They don't have to have any specific training. It was like a 2 week course and they were ready to go out there with a gun.
The fuck?
It's craziness. I will say, you mentioned that about white people and them not seeing cops. I have this theory about white people and the way that they're treated by cops and why they don't give a shit about it. It's because white culture instills a sense of individuality and exceptionalism. So if they see a white person that's getting accosted by a police officer, their first thought is, well, that couldn't be me.
Mm-hmm.
They always, that's their first line of defense. It would never happen to me because I'm special. Whereas black people see it happen to a black person, like, fuck, that could still be me. Like, right. Immediately, it's our first fucking thought, like, damn, that could be me in a second. And that's why this disconnect happens, where the police kill way more white people than they kill black people. Like, numbers wise.
Because there's a lot more white
percentage
people.
Percentage wise, sure. No, but numbers wise, it's volume way more. Wise, volume yep. wise, it's way more white people. But they don't give a shit because it could never be them. It could never be them.
No, it is him. And then all of a sudden, how did this happen?
I can't believe it.
White people, I get bullied in school. I can't
wait, we're not going to do that.
We're not doing white people?
No, we're going to skip white people.
Okay.
Yes. I wanted to jump into this article about the wines that you can pair with Girl Scout cookies, because I know Chris loves Girl Scout cookies.
Oh, yeah, they're fucking great.
For those who don't know, Chris hates Girl Scout cookies. Tell people why.
I don't think he hates Girl Scout cookies. I think he hates Girl Scout cookie sellers. But
he hates the actual cookies.
I just don't think Girl Scout cookies are as great as, you know, people make them out to be. Like, when have you ever had a freshly baked Girl Scout cookie?
Do they make them freshly baked?
I don't think they do. And I'm telling people that they think they have, and I'm just saying, I've had fresh baked chocolate chip cookies, and they're delicious. Mm-hmm. I have never had a warm, freshly baked Girl Scout cookie. If I can have a warm, baked, freshly cooked, baked Girl Scout cookie, they are not real cookies.
All right. They're just, you know. But what about, do you not like Oreos? Do you not like Chips Ahoy? Do you not like any of those kinds either?
Yeah, but when you're thinking, when you name your favorite cookie, do you go, oh, yeah, you know what it is? It's Oreos. I'm eating some fucking Oreos because, you know, well, you know, there's nothing else around.
Point taken. Point taken.
Duly noted.
We will run. Maybe this will make it more palatable for you, Chris, because you'll be like, well, I can have a little wine, whatever. Okay. And maybe those of us that do. I'm not a huge Girl Scout cookie fan. Funnily enough, my good friend Tia actually just texted me while we're on the air to ask me if I wanted to buy Girl Scout cookies from her goddaughter. So.
That's what it is.
It's a
fucking scam. That's all it is.
Now you can buy, like, they have, like, online, you can, like, you plug in a girl and you just buy online, so they don't even have to, like, have a sheet or anything anymore.
Listen, I'm telling you, the Girl Scouts are
it's a racket.
The number one, they're the number one drug dealing organization in the fucking country now. They really are. They got everybody fooled. I'm one to them, but it's okay, you know, it's fine.
All right, so shortbread, apparently you should pair it with sparkling wine or Chardonnay, okay? Do-si-dos should be paired with either a dessert wine or a semi-sweet Riesling. Good to know. I can see that. The Samoas are supposed to be paired with another sparkling wine. Looks like they have some actual specifics. I'll put the link in. Rah-Rah Raisin, which I've never even heard of. Maybe they don't sell those here in Michigan. It's supposed to be paired with a Malbec or a Zinfandel, a red Zinfandel. Toffee-tastic are supposed to go with champagne or dry Riesling. And finally, Thin Mints, which I think is the, like, number one Girl Scout cookie, is supposed to be paired with either Merlot or Pinot Noir. So there you have it, guys. When you get your Girl Scout cookie on.
I like that. Is it a sommelier who gave the recommendation? Can we trust this?
It's from Thrillist. So I'm thinking they must have had some sort of, it looks like Napa Valley wine grower and Chino's expert Paula Maltan made a bunch of pairing recommendations for them. So
very nice.
There you go.
Yet another reason why you don't trust Girl Scout cookies. At no point in that list do they just say a glass of milk.
Well, they know they gotta up it up. Yeah,
right. You have to have wine because you have to be drunk to enjoy them. So I'm just saying. Chocolate chip cookies, all you need is milk.
Well, I noticed that they've been like farming out the brand now. There's like Nestle Crunch with Girl Scout cookies in them now. They have like a whole
line.
They
do licensing.
And so you'll see it on like ice cream
now. Especially. Yeah.
So it's interesting to see them kind of monetizing the brand that is Girl Scouts. I wasn't in Girl Scouts.
Cold Stone Creamery popularized it.
Yeah. If I was drug dealers, I'd want to expand my business too. I'm just saying.
So I came across this really crazy article about five people on Etsy who are clearly serial killers.
Yeah, you know, we know that John likes lists, so I thought this was a good list as well.
Well,
definitely
serial
killers.
It's so creepy. I'm going to put a link, obviously, in the show notes, but we'll go through them really quick, and you guys, you know, just
and everyone listen. We all know what Etsy is. It's like a site where you can sell
homemade goods. Yeah.
So think of it like as Amazon, but for like handcrafted shit, right? Yeah. Like just, you know, small little things, and lots of people make a little bit of money here and there, and sometimes it's photos, art, whatever. So you can sell anything on Etsy. They're not opposed to, you know, there's a market for everything and anything.
Yep.
So these are five things that we think, or this article says, and I tend to agree, make them serial killer. Yeah. So why don't you start, Leslie?
So this one guy wants to sell faces of dead animals. So
that is exactly like it sounds.
Yeah,
like
it's literally
dead animal faces.
Dead animal faces just pulled right off. The eyes missing, full nose, the whole nine. It's he sells the faces of foxes, coyotes, raccoons, and bobcats.
Why not?
It's like if you're gonna do taxidermy, but like you were bad at it, you kept fucking it up, and like just get the face off. Jim will sell it.
He's got
the face store. Give it to Jimmy.
The legs and skulls of just about everything.
Exactly.
Else. Grouse feet, deer legs with real animal bone parts. You guys, I'm reading the listings now. Five real animal bone part gator feet.
But like, and he's like to put this up on Etsy and like. For real, dude, like the grouse feet, $5, right? Like the animal bone parts,
and then
$12.
He makes some things he thinks would be really good for, you know, the lady in your life, like a pink motorcycle lady helmet with a fur fox skin tail attached.
But like when I say like like for real, like first of all, like this dude's cutting faces and like doing all this shit. But on Etsy, it's like a little bit of like, it's like your Amazon store, like eBay back in the day. You want to make it look nice. So you like, you know, make your page do this and that. The dude has set up in his home a like, what do you call it? Like a photo, like not a lab, but like, you know what I'm talking about, with like lighting and like a backdrop and shit.
He's got
like a studio. He's got a little like photographic studio to like prop the faces up.
To me, the coup de grace is the real animal part. Skin taxidermy frog purse. So you can give that to your friends. She can put a chapstick in there, some coins. It's an actual fucking frog.
Does the stuff like go bad? Is it
no,
like
it's taxidermy. So it's like, it's been treated or all this shit's been sucked out of it and dried and whatever. And you can just walk around with an actual real frog around your neck because that sounds like something I'd want to do.
Okay. Hey, you know what? Valentine's Day is coming up.
It's coming up, guys.
Dead face coming on the corner. Raccoon.
Coming up,
guys.
That's
what we should have done with Binks died. Cut our face off.
Mm-hmm.
So number four is a flesh koozie for your bell jar.
Oh.
Human flesh koozie.
Nice.
Yeah. So apparently sympathetic to the plight of all those that wanted to have a flesh-covered koozie because, you know, there's a market for everything. He has a skin suit metal clip jar, and it coined the phrase, there's a market for everything. They probably never anticipated that tourism might someday include glassware disguised as teratoma tumors. And it's literally got teeth, a fucking eye. It's the grossest fucking looking thing
I've
ever seen.
He says that it's made from actual skin from a cadaver, you guys.
That's literally the fucking like.
I put quotes around that. I don't want to look cadaver. At
it. That just looks so fucking gross. Dude.
It's really disgusting.
An eye? It's literally got a fucking eyeball. Why would you put anything? Why would that? Honestly, I wouldn't want that anywhere near. I wouldn't want that in my home, much less something I want to keep and like drink or use. Like, it's a jar, right? Like, oh my God, that's the grossest thing ever. And that's literally straight up serial killer. And it's only $25.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, that's reasonable then. You know, why not? I wasn't all in until you said it was $25, and then how can you pass that up?
Yep. The next one is this lady wants you to own the last thing you see before you die. And basically, she takes photos. She's a Canadian photographer, and she takes photos of children wearing ceremonial animal masks in like outdoor settings. It's so creepy. I don't know why anybody would buy them.
I'm sorry, back to the dude before that had the animal jar. Yeah. He also has a mutilated baby face ornament, and it's so fucking gruesomely creepy. Like, his crazy level's like, this isn't fake. Like, that's like a nightmare. Like, it's a mutilated baby face ornament that I can't unsee.
Super creepy. These pictures are really creepy as well. Mm-hmm.
And, like, why would you, like, they're like kids with like an archival print with a pig mask. Like, it's the juxtaposition is bizarre. You know, it seems like it does seem like when you'd put in the tape on the ring, right? You're watching the TV and like all the different things flash. This is one of them. Like, oh my God, I saw the fucking beast.
Mm-hmm. The next guy wants to be your old teeth and use prosthetics guy. So you can buy old teeth from him. Oddity human tooth lot. Denture teeth from a mental asylum. Real dentures, guys.
But why? But you know,
how do you even acquire that? These?
Yeah,
Chris, where would you go to get dentures? Just from random a dentures. Asylum.
I these are all white people, right?
Oh yes, all of them.
Okay,
all of them.
Hey, Drew. This is why your people are amazing. This is why I'm hoping one day maybe we do somehow end all racism and discrimination, but I want your people to keep this part of them. Do not lose this sense of wonder, because I don't know what we would do without.
Oh
like,
my gosh!
This is the contribution of white people to the world. This kind of shit, because I would never think of some shit like this. This is truly amazing.
Yo, scroll down on that page, Leslie. Is that him? Is that the seller?
Yeah, that's him.
With the fucking, what's with that fucking mask and the fucking lock and shit?
He's selling antique farm collars.
This dude is like, he's white, but I'm gonna say we're gonna give him up in the racial draft.
Oh, no,
yeah,
nobody's taking him.
You can't give him up.
Nobody's taking him.
You gotta get some good quality shit for that guy. Because I mean, just saying, you can't make this kind of shit up. You can't. It takes a special kind of person to be this kind of crazy.
Yeah, so number one takes the cake, maybe. So this nice woman is offering a mystery box of animal sheddings and doll eyes. Working in the same vein as the man who sells faces of coyotes, this woman offers hunks of different species, beetle wings, sea urchin spines, spent cocoons, all types of bird feathers. But in addition, she has a whole pile of, yes, doll eyes for sale. Eyes that were pried out of the heads of dolls out of mud from collapsed doll factories. You can be certain they've seen their last, they haven't seen their last tragedy in life.
What kind of hobby is going to, what, collapse dolls?
Oh my God. The most troubling offer item she offers is called the Magical Mystery Box of Curious Supplies. Mm-mm. She promises that it will include all the supplies that an old person would want, like rodent bones and bird eggs, but also whatever she's laying around that she can pack into the box.
If she's probably married to somebody.
If you're wondering what a serial killer might have laying around, here's the picture that accompanies the mystery box.
What's the picture?
It's a puppy.
Of course it is, because that makes perfect sense.
A small flat rate box full of curious supplies.
Oh my God, that's so creepy.
So he ordered it 4 days ago and hasn't received it yet, but I have no idea if I'll actually get a piece of puppy.
See what happens.
Wow. That is super creepy, dude.
White people.
Yeah, I'll give one more run. Oh, wait, I muted it.
What'd you mute?
My sound effects.
Oh.
White people.
Oh, yeah, do Zoe.
I get bullied in school. I can't wait till I'm a cop so I can bully you. White people.
Hey, hey, hey.
Hey.
White people, you are like so very white. Seriously, the whitest.
God damn it. Fucking white people.
Got them all in today. That was nice. Etsy serial killer list, man.
Oh my gosh. So we finally got around to watching Jessica Jones.
Yes.
Chris.
Yes.
I dug it a lot, man.
It was so good.
Really good for a first like series. Like really, really. It felt like the whole first 10 episodes or 13 episodes was like an extended pilot, like almost like an extended origin with her and fucking Kilgrave and shit. But I fucking loved it. Thought it was amazing.
Yeah, I think it's probably like, I think this year was Marvel really doing some different stuff that was going to be harder for them. Like, I don't think people realize how hard that doing a Jessica Jones series really was. Because that's a kind of a tough character to do. You know, because like especially her introduction in the comics, it's just like it was part of the Marvel Max series, and it just wasn't, you know, it wasn't like your typical. She's not your typical superhero,
right?
You know, and I've seen so many people go, man, she couldn't even fight. I'm like, yeah, that's the point. She's not a superhero.
Yeah, right? She gets hurt, not easily, but she gets, you know,
right,
injured.
So yeah, I love that series. It was great. Like I. It is dark too, like
very everything. Dark, super nuanced. I loved just the thing I loved about the character is that it wasn't a story of her growth per se. Like Jessica's fully formed, and she's just kind of dealing with the situations that she has to deal with in the course of the season. And I love that it wasn't an origin story in the like, oh, she's got to learn a lesson. It was like, nah, man, she's up against some fucked up shit, and she's got to just do what she has to do to get through it. And I love that about it. And I also just remember when they announced all of these series with Netflix, and all, I remember just, you know, I'm a little cynical, but I was like, how are they going to pull this off? Like, how is it going to, like, they announced Daredevil, they announced Jessica Jones, Luke Cage is coming out soon. What are the other ones, Chris? They have a few more, right? Besides that?
No, for the Netflix series, that was it. Iron Fist is
right,
the other one.
Right, Iron Fist. Right. And
then they do them all together as the Defenders.
Right. And I remember thinking, like, that's such a big commitment for Marvel to make. But then watching, I really liked Daredevil, and I thought Jessica Jones took it even, you know, further in terms of the nuance that the story was able to tell and the stylistic nature of it. And that they all obviously inhabit the same world. You know, Rosario coming in.
That was great.
I loved all of it. So I, you know, those who haven't seen it.
I thought Ritter did a great job. Yeah, I love her as an actress.
Great. And you know, it was a great villain, David Tennant, who you never get to see as a bad guy. I thought it was really good. Just great.
Yeah, I thought it was really done really well. The relationship she has with various folks, the pieces of information that they give you out, like even though they're telling you the story of her and Kilgrave in kind of real time, they're also telling it to you in reverse time, giving you pieces.
What happened.
Yeah, yeah. You know, almost like Green Arrow does with the island and shit. Like, maybe little pieces and flashbacks and stuff. But I thought it was done really well. I don't know why I think we fell asleep during the first
something happened. We didn't episode. Get to finish it. And then I went away for a long time. And so, but we finally good. Got through it this weekend.
So we're also watching American Crime to some degree. We've only watched a couple episodes. But we started watching it last year, and then we didn't really get too into it. It was like, okay. But it's interesting. I think they're taking some – they tackle some pretty serious stuff, and they do it, I think, pretty straightforward. They don't – you know, nothing's clear, just like in real life. It's kind of like murky. But there was a real life kind of, I don't know, like art imitating life or life imitating art. But so, you know, are you watching American Crime at all, Chris?
No, I heard about this. I heard mixed reviews about the first season. And I know that they do. That's what it is. The first season was when they had like the Muslim
right
the it was black like Muslim
a,
family
yeah it was right. a racial crime that happened, and there was like a bunch of like misunderstandings of what happened. I don't know all the details of it, but that was the crux of the storyline. I didn't actually even realize that it was an anthology series, meaning that the same people come back but they play completely different people, like American Horror Story. I had no idea about that. So when I saw the previews for this season, I was like, wait, but last season Regina King was a Muslim and she had hijab on, and I was like, I was confused, and then I realized, oh, it's like a whole different thing.
Yeah. So well, this year and I'll just talk about the first episode. I don't like spoil anything. And I think have they had the second episode yet?
Maybe
they
haven't. It might be on tonight. Actually, it
might be tonight. Mm-hmm. But so the first episode involves a young man who starts out by getting suspended from school because there's some photos, and it kind of turns out that maybe something inappropriate happened. And they're talking about, like, you know, was he drugged? Was there an assault, sort of, you know, rape? And it's, again, a male student talking about other male athletes at his school. And in real life, a Tennessee school superintendent, amid public concerns of a cover-up on Wednesday, canceled the entire season of a boys' varsity basketball team a few weeks after a freshman player said he was raped by teammates. Mm-hmm. And in this incident involved a pool stick. And, you know, I know, like, you know, I'm not I grew up, went to high school, and I know shenanigans and shit that happens in locker rooms and stuff, but when you're talking about, you know, pool cues and penetration, he had to have surgery. Like, he like literally he was raped.
Wow.
Like, raped is the right word for this young man. But I thought it was a pretty, I don't say class move, but a good move that they just canceled the entire season. They're going to focus, you know, every effort on bringing this truth to light and making sure folks are held accountable. And they even, I thought, I would say a little bit strange, but they was it in this one? I think they were talking about the names of individuals that weren't even, they were under 18, but they're releasing some names, but not the individual that was injured. But very similar to this storyline that's on American Crime.
Yeah.
I thought that, I guess that's why. I guess this isn't, I'm sure this isn't the first incident of something like this happening in a school.
Right. Wow. Yeah, I think the interesting thing is going to be because they're doing the story and it's not a woman or a girl.
Right.
And so I think that's going to be interesting because so many times you hear and you do these stories and it's just, oh, okay, you're going to, you know, the rape storyline, and we know this happens to women, but hey, this does happen to young men and young boys, and we never talk about it.
Nope.
So I think that's very, very interesting storyline and an interesting way to go about this.
Yeah, and they definitely, you know, like I said, so far I've been, like, I think with you I heard mixed reviews about last year and we didn't really watch it, but I think this is interesting. And I like the way that they're so far tackling the situation.
Telling the story, yeah.
Yeah, and telling the story. And like Chris said, it's not something that I think gets a lot of light. You know, I think even there's this stigma about assault, generally victims, and then there's a stigma secondarily about, you know, homosexuality. And does that make you gay because you were assaulted by another male? You know what I'm saying? Like, that's definitely something that doesn't get a lot of discussion.
Yeah. What are you watching right now, Chris?
Honestly, nothing.
Nothing.
I'm taking a break because, you know, I got all those shows coming back.
Right.
What did, is there something, anything I watched recently? No, I mean, I guess it's the last time I talked, I haven't finished the series yet, but it's really good. I think the first season is on Netflix. It's the From Dusk Till Dawn series.
Oh, okay, yeah, I heard. I didn't watch any of it. Is that it's good?
For the old movie Dusk Till Dawn?
Yeah, but they made it. So Robert Rodriguez went and back and he did a TV show. And basically what the TV show is, it kind of is retracing the movie and doing the general plot line, but then he expanded on it, and he made his whole El Rey network is basically, we talk about diversity. I mean, he went and got, like, he went and took that concept about the vampires in Mexico and just made it like embrace like the culture of it, and so it's really actually really really good.
Wow.
I know the second season I think just ended. I interviewed them at New York Comic Con, and I watched the first season, and it was really really good. So cool. I know I watched that. That was a while ago.
And you said it's on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
All right,
I love that movie, man.
Yeah.
Is that you too?
Yeah. Is this the right song? Yeah. From the movie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I thought that was a great movie.
Yeah, no, it was a really good, and I'm telling you, like, the show is even better. Like, it digs into things that the movie couldn't.
Okay.
And it explains like why Richie was as crazy as he was in the movie. Like he does a bunch of stuff, and you're just like, oh, he's just no. And that movie, Richie was played by Quentin Tarantino,
right?
Right.
So now it's but this is it's so much better.
All right, cool.
Let's see. I watched The Man in the High Castle on. I didn't finish it yet, but that's on Amazon.
Do you like that?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good. Okay. I mean,
It's been on my list, but I haven't actually taken the plunge yet. So.
Yeah, it's good. Like I said, there. I mean, some of the characters are really really dumb, but you know it's a lot of shows. So I can't hold too much against it. So that was good. And
have you seen Mozart in the Jungle? Yeah, mm-mm. Have you watched that?
No,
that just won a Golden Globe for best, I think, comedy or something on TV, and it also won best actor, Gael. Mm. Bael Barcia or whatever his name is. And it's so funny. I haven't heard anything about it. And it's also on Amazon. I don't even know what it's about. I got to find somebody who watches it. I'm shocked.
Amazon's
got
a few different things coming out now.
Yeah, I'm going to try to get a bunch of, like, I got to, there's Beast of No Nation, again, another one of the movies that.
I feel like that movie's going to upset me, though.
Right. That's another one that's in my, I know I probably need to see because somebody even asked me about it recently. And I'm like, yeah, I just don't know if I want to.
I need to do it.
So there's a lot of those.
Yeah, like I haven't watched 12 Years a Slave. I refuse to watch it.
Oh, no,
I won't.
No,
I won't do
no,
it.
No, that's another one I just don't watch. I'll never watch that.
I was mad I went to see Selma, to be perfectly honest. And I did go see it because I felt like I had to. I felt mm-hmm. very like, okay, you know, it's Ava and it's David. And, I felt like it was just necessary. But
yeah.
Yeah.
I can't get mad at that because I totally understand that.
Can't do it. Can't do it. And then what was the other thing? Oh, and then Drew finally saw Dope yesterday, which was so good.
Yes.
I had seen it on a plane, and so it was nice to see it, like, you know, not on a tiny little screen in front of me. And it was so good. Gosh, I just loved everything about it. I feel like there's a 90s revival going on. I just mentioned this today earlier. Seems like the 90s are starting to be, like, that's the retro time now.
I gotta check, but I think the kid from Dope is in another movie or something that's on Netflix or a Netflix series that seems to be about like 90s music or 80s music or something like that. Maybe
it's the same actor. He's going to be in The Get Down. That's going to be on Netflix. But from Baz Luhrmann about the like origins of hip hop in the late 70s, early 80s. Yeah. I don't know what his role is, but I do know that he's in it. So he'll be on there.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, well, yeah, this kid, he just wants to do. Okay, I can't fault him for that. He just wants to do these types of movies where he just. I wonder if he's like that in real life.
I wonder
because it seems too
like suited for him, right?
Yeah, like too much of a coincidence that he's also just like really into that as well. So,
mm-hmm. Well, tell all the people where they can find you, where they can find all your shows, and how to join Premium, which everybody should go out and do immediately.
Right. We are on movietrailerreviews.net, but we're more than the name makes it seem like we're just movies and TV shows. We are not. We're more than that. You can find us on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Search for Movie Trailer Reviews or the MTR Network on iTunes because we actually have a provider page now that gives you separate feeds for several of our different stuff. Same thing for Premium. So our Premium shows, we have Reminiscing with Chris where we go through older TV shows and movies. I know Drew has been on two of those, right? You did
Tremors,
and then we did
They Live.
And I got to contact you and D-Pom about doing the Transformer animated movie so we can ruin D-Pom's day. we do Hell No Cuban, where John and I basically have real conversations about relationships and, you know, getting over breakups and just things like that. So this is very just two guys having a legit, real conversation about that I don't think a lot of guys have. Comic book book club, where we just had, we pick several comic books, comic book runs, and we go through and we read them like a book club. I know coming up, we have the Suicide Squad, the original Suicide Squad runs from the 80s.
Nice.
So we have that. We're going to do that. We have Secret Six, Agents of Next Wave, Agent of Hate. That's on Marvel Unlimited. So we have that. And there's a bunch of other shows, too, that we're doing that would be great. So you can get the movie. You can get our premium shows on MovieTrailerReviews.net. Just go to the top. And you'll see a MTR Premium Network. And you'll find out how to do it. It's $8 a month. And you get at least 8 shows a month. And like I said, I've already planned out through February. So they'll get plenty of shows coming out. So it'll be fun.
Awesome. And they can follow you. They can follow you on Twitter because you're pretty prolific on there, too.
I am on Twitter. I'm at Insanity Reports on Twitter. And I'm just saying, yeah, don't question me about anything on my Twitter.
Don't.
I know that we had, and I won't ask you to divulge, but you had sort of a benchmark once you reached so many premium subscribers.
Oh, yeah. Did you have to join the Steve Harvey thing yet?
No, I did not. I'm actually glad. But we actually got more than I thought I would in my first year. But we didn't. We got close, but we didn't.
Okay.
And I didn't have to join.
I'd like to throw out a new challenge. If there's another benchmark that's met, you join White People Meet. And then as you, like full on as you, like just like, nah, I'm here to meet white women.
That's actually not a bad idea because when you go to blackpeoplemeet.com, there's a lot of white people. You guys came, we can't even get our own dating site.
Oh, goodness. White people have to be so extra. And then, the other thing I wanted to mention was you guys have the Facebook group for the Character Corner, correct?
Oh, yes. There's a closed Facebook group we're very selective on adding in just because we have a show called The Character Corners, one of our free shows. And basically what we do is we pick a character and or a group of characters, and we do some background on their comic book origin and things like that. Like we just did, if you're going to be watching Legends of Tomorrow, we just did one on Rip Hunter and Vandal Savage.
Yeah.
So you give some primer on that. I know upcoming ones, we have Doctor Doom, Deadpool, and nice. Wonder Woman. Those are the next three we're going to be doing.
That's awesome.
Three separate shows.
And I have to say, like, I love the Character Corners because for me, like, I wasn't a huge comic book fan or anything, and I don't know a lot of these backstories, but it makes watching these shows so much more robust, like just going in with a lot of knowledge and kind of picking up on little, you know, hints and little nods that they do. And, you know, it's a great, great, great show that you guys do. I love it.
I'll be honest. It's been fun doing these just because it's gotten me back into comics, and it makes me realize, it makes me learn more about the characters myself. Like, people think I'm some big comic nerd, and I'm like, yeah, it was a long time ago, but now, I hadn't read comics in such a long time, and now it's like, it gets me to get back in and read these and find out just how much, you know, how much things have changed. And I think comic books got a bad rep for not being like regular books, but right. When you look at the stories and things that go into them, they're just as good, you know?
I mean, you can look at the quality of writers they have. I mean, you were just talking about Ta-Nehisi is going to be writing for Black Panther. You know, these companies are going after high quality writers and have for quite some time to really create a robust world for these characters. And it's what allows them to do amazing movies and amazing TV shows because they have this rich source material that they get to draw back on and these well-defined characters. It's amazing.
Independent of writers today or then, the comics have always, I think, as a medium, been able to push the envelope a little bit. You know, they can take a little bit more of a I don't know. They just as a medium, I think they've always been envelope pushing.
Yeah, they've definitely been able to make commentary that other genres have not.
Yeah,
so I think that's definitely, and that's continued to today. So it's awesome. Well, Chris, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Generous of you. Thank you. Thank you.
Having you on. It's so much fun to have you on and talk about all this fun stuff. And we have next week, we have Karen from The Black Guy Who Tips on the show. We love when she comes on too. Queen of the podcast. We also have after that, Think Pretty Smart from Whiskey, Wine, and Moonshine. That's going to be here. And then the week after that, we'll be doing our next Cooking John. So you can learn to cook with us. And
I'll just say this. I know a lot of folks, and there's some, at least I say a lot, because we have the Baker's Dozen fans. All 13 of you. Some number of the 13 of you discovered us through other podcasts. And I would highly recommend you find Chris's Twitter feed and check out the Movie Trade Reviews Premium Network and Sanity Check as a podcast. He does a lot of content, like five times more than, you know, most folks do. He's on the podcast mic a lot. He's got great stuff, great guests. Him and D-Palm, a great rapport. And, you know, just we haven't really discussed this with people that listen to our show, but I know as Leslie is the producer of our show, she don't fucks with people that got shit. Like, if you know, if you're on our show, if you're on the John, I'm not saying the John's like this like high caliber, like, oh, if you're on the John, oh my God, you've made it. Oh my God. No, not at all. But on the other hand, like, we don't got no fucking, you know, bullshit.
I don't have
on the
randos
show.
On
the yeah,
show.
There ain't no bullshit on the show.
No, I mean, we listen. Like,
Chris is vetted.
Yeah. I mean, well, I listen to your show every
week. You guys are going to be on my show, I think, the first week of February.
Yeah, first week in February. True. So we'll be there in a couple weeks. Yeah, I mean, we love your show. It's so good. It's so great to listen to. And we didn't get you to the high-pitched voice
level.
Yeah,
we didn't get the FET rant.
This show, but
trying to – new year, new me. I'm trying not to let this shit get to me anymore, so I'm trying.
All right.
It's hard.
We appreciate it. Well, yeah. I'm glad that we didn't push you to that point.
Good night, everybody.
High five.